And a very newest Member of Parliament, the Congress of the political persuasion, sit on the same side. Generally, not a rule. And in this committee, we've always observed that practice. The only reason the Honourable James appears to be now out of order, but not out of order, is that he is, this is his bill. It is a private member's bill. So for a moment in time, he gets to present a bill to us and not to sit on this side while the department's presenting a bill to us. So that is the only time that he's here. He remains an honourable member, of course. while I think his chief, as it were, presenter is doing this, it's advisable for you to sit there, and then, of course, at any point in time to sit here. But it won't be advisable for you to question your own presenter, you know, bill at this point in time. Honourable McIntosh?
Madam Chair, on that topic, I remember about 20 years ago there was a political document which appeared in this country called Ready to Govern. And I think maybe even Mr. James would like to believe that that's happening now.
All right. Members, I know that we've got a lot ahead of us. And I, Honourable Kobasa, in the absence of Honourable Hagedi, I'd like you to be coming to the fore, as it were, here, and then possibly, you know, just on the sidelines here, because I'll... Members, we need to get started, and we're not too sure we're with this at the moment, but we're starting immediately after plenary, which is at 5:45, and here is the whip right now, and our apologies only that I'm aware of is the Honourable Ariane Ambrosini, is Honourable Elvis. And the Honourable, your colleague, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable James, who's not here. We have got a new member with us. We are very fortunate that the African National Congress has sought to deploy the Honourable Daryl Swanepoel to this committee. He comes with a wealth of experience in this field. Thank you very much. And congratulations and welcome. This is new to all of us, and you should be aware of that, that the bill called the Traditional Protection of Traditional Knowledge is a private member's bill introduced by the Honourable James and under the interim rules, and the Professor Owen Dean has been asked by the Honourable James to detail the technical aspects, as I understand it, with certain policy outlines, which of course the Honourable James will speak to as the person who has tabled this bill here in Parliament. On that note, I also wish to inform you that I am leaving for 15 minutes, because I am also a member of the Rules Committee, which is taking a decision right now, and then I will return. And I will ask the Honourable Kwabata to... it's a good thing I understand, as it were, the deaf form, you know, all these signage and things. Yeah, the Honourable Kwabata to come and share when I leave for a short while. So, on that note, we would like members on my right, one of them, to propose adoption of the agenda. Honourable Salah, seconded by the Honourable McIntosh. Professor Owen Dean, I stay here hopefully long enough to welcome you and explain why I'm going to be out here for a short while. Thank you very much for everyone's understanding. I'll ask Honourable Babasa to come and take the chair.
Good chair.
Good day. Well, I've already handed over.
Oh,
okay. Now I think about handing over.
Yes, no, Colleague Chair, I don't feel good to say this, but I must apologize and ask you to leave at 5 to 6. What has happened is that as the warehouse went on, I went on getting a fever of a flu nature. So I realized that that's why I even took something much warmer than my normal jacket. So I would appreciate if the House can let me leave at 5 to 6.
Okay. I hope that apology, that request is granted. All right, let's proceed. I'm sorry, I had a slightly different...
Yes, I just need to thank you very much, Chair. I just needed to frame what is about to happen. You will recall, colleague, that we reviewed the public submissions to the protection of traditional knowledge bill in our last session, and having gone through that, I thought it would be a very good idea to illustrate the differences between the private members bill and the IPIB by taking a practical example, and I'll ask Professor Owen Dean to do a presentation very short that illustrates it. So, and therefore I'd like to thank him for doing that. Also, for those of you who did not meet Dr. Caroline Hoopy from the University of Cape Town, she's also part of the team.
Go ahead, Professor Owen Dean.
Thank you very much, Chair. As Dr. James has said, when we last gathered here, we made various presentations to you, and then the idea was to move forward to questions, but the time was limited, and it was then decided to hold questions over and all day. And in the meantime, we thought it may be helpful to give you some practical examples, because it's a complex area, and you know, we talk happily about designs and copyright and all of these things, as though everyone else knows what we're talking about. But as lay people, I'm sure you probably are not quite clear on what these things are. So the object of the exercise here is to give you some practical examples so you can perhaps have a better understanding as to what we're talking about when we mention copyright and we mention design. So, now the principal focus of the James Bill is really, although it refers to traditional knowledge, as does the department bill, the IP layer, in fact it's a bit of a misnomer, because really what we're talking about is traditional cultural expressions. Internationally, the broad field of traditional knowledge is divided up between the more technical sides of traditional knowledge, medical products and so forth, and then what is known as cultural expressions. So both the IP lab and the Jamesville really only deal with cultural expressions. They don't deal with medicines and that sort of thing. So I just want to make that point at the outset. Now, the principal kinds of works which come into contention are copyright, which the IP lab deals with them as copyright because it's amending the Copyright Act, whereas the James Bill talks about traditional works, but they're in the nature of copyright. And then the other main type of work is the registered design. That's what the IP lab deals with. And the James Bill deals with traditional design. So they both deal with a similar subject matter, but the terminology is perhaps a bit different. Now here's an example, well, and I'm sure to everybody, of Ndebele art. Now, this is what one might term a work of cultural expression, traditional knowledge as far as the bill is concerned. It can give rise to copyright and it can give rise to designs. Now let's first look at the copyright issue. The Ndebele art can constitute a work for purposes of copyright, and that brings it into the IP lab bill. So the IP lab bill talks about copyright in an artistic work, and it then makes a subset which it calls a traditional copyright work. Under the PTK, that's the James bill, it's referred to as a traditional work. Now here would be a practical application of a copyright work in the real life. A design or an artwork is used as the decoration for a house. That is a practical application of a copyright work. It's not going on for some reason. And here's another example. It's a similar sort of thing. It's an artwork which is used to decorate a building. Now that's use of copyright. Now the way that the IP lab deals with copyright is the following. It says that it must exist in material form or capable of substantiation from collective memory, whatever that might mean. I don't quite know really. It must be original. Now that is a very commonplace requirement for all copyright works. And what it means is that it must be the individual work of somebody. It must not be copied from something else. It must be independent, individual work. Now, quite how one does that with a traditional work, I don't know, because no one knows really who made it. So it's one of the shortcomings, as far as I'm concerned, of the IP lab, that you cannot meet this requirement of originality. But be it as it may, it is the IP lab lays that down as a requirement. It must be an indigenous work. The community, collectively, is considered to be the author of the work or the maker of the work, and it is also the owner of the work. And for purposes of the act, the community, which is not a company or anything like that, is deemed to be a juristic person, which is a bit of a strange concept. Now, in terms of IP lab, where the author cannot be determined or is claimed to be more than one community, in other words, more than one community comes forward and says that work actually comes from our community, then the IP lab prescribes that the trust fund, which is created under the Act, which in effect is the state, becomes the owner. So the community no longer is the owner of the work. The work actually becomes owned by the state. By comparison, the PTK, how it deals with the copyright work, the protection exists automatically provided certain conditions are met. It must exist in a material form, as with the IP lab. And then it must be recognized as being from and characteristic of the originating community by outside persons. In other words, outside persons must be able to say, yes, we know that work comes from that community. There's no requirement of originality as exists under the IP lab. And that is fortunate and intentional because the originality requirements can't be met by a traditional work. And then the James Bill says that a person who is nominated by the originating community to be as a representative, as referred to as the community proxy, is the owner of the work. And there is no circumstances in which the state can own one of these works in terms of the James Bill. So the IP Lab says the state can own the work in certain circumstances. James Bull says it's always owned by the community. No suggestion of state ownership. Now let's talk about design. The Ndebele art can also be embodied in a design. Now a design is something for the shape or ornamentation of an article. IP Lab called it an indigenous design. PTK called it a traditional design. Now here are examples of designs. You have a design for an article. In this instance, it's a shoe. So the design is applied to the shoe. Another example, these are obviously bangles on an arm, so the design is applied to the bangle. The design doesn't exist in the abstract. It actually is a design for a particular article, either for its shape or for its ornamentation. And here's the design applied to motor cars, so the ornamentation of the motor car. So this is how you work with a design. You apply it to an article. Now, IP Lab says that if you want a traditional design to be an indigenous design to be protected, you have to register it under the Designs Act. Now, that means that each individual design must be separately registered for each article to be protected. So, to go back to this design, if you want to use this design on a clothing, for instance, you've got to register it for clothing. If you want to use it on a bangle, you've got to register it for a bangle. For every application of the design, you have to file a separate design application. Currently, it probably costs somewhere between 5 and 10,000 rand to register a single design application. So it's going to be a very expensive process for designs to be protected under the IP Lab. Then an aesthetic design, which is what we're talking about, in order to be valid must be new. That is different from earlier designs introduced to the public anywhere in the world. Now, once again, I don't know how a traditional design can be new. At the time you file the application, if the application is going to be valid, it has to be a new design. And to my mind, it's impossible for a community-originated in the traditional design to meet that requirement. It also has to be original. That's the same concept as in copyright law. Somebody must come forward and say, this is my own individual work. I didn't copy anything else. I made this particular work independently. I don't believe that a community, an indigenous design can meet that requirement. IP Lab says that the community creating the design is the author and can register it. But if the author cannot be determined or the design is shared by a multiplicity of communities, in other words, more than one community comes forward and says that design belongs to us, then once again it is the state that owns the design. So you have another circumstance where there's almost like an expropriation, that the state becomes the owner of these items of property and not the communities themselves. Now under the James Bill, for a design to be protected, it exists automatically. You don't have to register. There's no requirement to register a design under the James Bill. It exists automatically, provided certain conditions are met. The conditions are, it must exist in the material form, and it must be recognized as being from a particular community by outside people, by third parties. So those are the only requirements. No registration, no originality, no suggestion that it has to be new. And then with the copyright work, the community proxy, the person appointed by the community is holds the ownership of the design in a representative capacity, and under no circumstances does the state own a design. Now let's look at how the commercial exploitation of these properties are dealt with by the two bills. Both of them make provision for licenses to be granted to third parties to use the properties subject to the payment of the royalties. That is, it's really a way of generating revenue. So you grant permission to somebody to use your design and then you charge a royalty or a fee for that right. Now under IP Lab, there are very onerous conditions laid down for granting licenses. The bill says that you have to have an agreement which must be submitted to the government in advance. The government must approve the bill, the license in advance, before you can even negotiate with the person who wants to use it. Now that's going to be a very cumbersome process, and it's one shudders to think how that's going to work in practice. under the James Bill, it's informal. There are no formalities for granting of a license. It can be writing. It doesn't have to be writing. It can be granted orally. So it's a very informal system, and it works. It's the way copyright and works in other spheres as well. Now, both bills make provision for licenses to be paid to this body which is set up called the National Trust. Under IPLAB, there is no obligation on the National Trust to pay the monies to any community. The monies can be spent at the discretion of the trust. So a community's work is used, royalties are paid, the royalties get paid into the trust fund. The trust fund doesn't have to pay the royalties to the community. There's no prescription at all what has to be done with this money. Under the James Bill, the National Trust is obliged to pay the royalties collected to the originating community. So if a particular work or design is licensed out and it derives revenue, the revenue is paid into the National Trust Fund, the Trust Fund is obliged. It has to pay that money that has been collected over to the community. So the net result is we say that under the James Bill you can have very happy people making traditional items like you see in this photograph, and they can own these, the community can own these items, and the money that is derived from using or selling these items goes to the people it should go to, namely the communities. Thank you.
Thank you. I shall ask the Honourable Wilde to take over for a short while, because I have another commitment, but I'll come back to the meeting. In the meantime, Honourable McIntosh, anyone else? Honourable Khatere, the Honourable Filau, in the Oya, Honourable Faith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Professor Dean. I just have a question about what one might call culture, and obviously the Ndebele's tradition is very powerful and dramatic and strong, and South Africans are very proud of it. But there are a number of other, and that's my question is, how does one accept that? For example, if you're going to what we call Pondoland, you will find blue and white is very strong, and it appears in the traditional colors. Similarly, if you go to Sekhukhune land, you will find the people, that male dancers use kilts, a type of kilt for their activities. Also, if you go and visit Nongoma, when there's a big cattle sale, or sometimes when the pensions are being paid, you will see large numbers of people selling what we would call traditional articles, sagila special, and they sell bear shoes and esmenes, which is a sort of Zulu kilt, and that sort of thing. And they're all special names, which people wear as tolas, a sort of the traditional Zulu head which Mantuli might wear, and on a special day. But the point is, each of them have a certain cultural expression, but it doesn't really stay at that. They had a big celebration at the Kishaga airport, for example, for the king, Isilo, and I was fascinated because they brought dancers from all over the province. But how many of them, how creative, while retaining the form, they added all kinds of embellishments to their traditional costumes. And how would TK handle that, and could even handle that?
It's a very good question.
It's a very good question, and really one of the...
can we take all the questions so that we can manage hands? Sorry for that interruption. Over to you.
All right, thank you, Chairperson. This one is a question that is directed to Professor Owen Dean. Professor Owen Dean was here when we dealt with the IPLAB And then, but what I'm interested more is the issue of the article which came in the Sunday Times this year, whereby Professor Dean was quoted asking this bill is his, is not Dr. James bill. Can you get a clarity on that one?
I think the idea of a community, what is community in respect of the presentation the professor has just made? Because intellectual property does not belong to a particular, it may belong to a particular village, but it does not necessarily, not all of them will be like that. I just want to come up with a couple of examples in addition to what Honorable McIntosh has raised. There is a dress, a kind of a dress, is known throughout South Africa as Seshweshwe. It doesn't matter who wears it. Everybody knows it is an international property of the Basotho Basotho. It's called Seshweshwe. And Basotho in their own nation, and I'm talking a nation, Lesotho, all use a blanket as a form of a jacket. And there is a particular Spanish type of a hat. And those kinds of designs are known throughout the whole of Africa as designs of the Bachelet. In the same manner, you get some designs. The president sometimes wears a certain attire. So you sometimes find Utata Buchele is wearing the similar attire. It is a Zulu attire. It is a traditional Zulu attire. Every Zulu or everyone recognizes that attire as a Zulu attire. And to us, that's an international, it's an IP of the all the Zulus, irrespective of from which chief or from which chief. So I'm not sure how you relate these issues with the kind of community you make reference to in your presentation. That is the first question. The second question is the issue of the role of state. It's a problem that the state can be able to be making laws for people for which they will not be monetary. You make the laws to say people can have intellectual property, but thereafter, what is happening today, whether it's done, whether this law is monitored or is evaluated, it works or it doesn't work, you leave it up to chance. To me, it doesn't work. The state must have a role in anything that it makes law, and every law must have regulations. But what is more important is that the presentation, as you make prof, is a very good, helpful presentation. But in the manner it has been put, it's not really designed. It's not really designed in a manner that would put A here against A this side, B here against B this side. It has been put in a manner that too much of high level than the scholarly type of comparison. As a result, it's not easy to follow. But it would be very helpful to us to see what is it that is good this side and what is it that is good this side, if it was done in a manner that Ms. Helen could have copied from you, Prof. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Salah. Thank you, Honourable Waiili, for stepping in for the chair there. Guess it was a baptism by fire for you as well today. Honourable Salah. Not Salah, Honourable Three.
Thank you, Chair. I think mine is more just a comment rather than a question. I think the ACDP has long spoken of the aspect of what we would call restorative justice. And I mentioned in the previous meeting, particularly with regards to the competition tribunals and commissions, that money is needed to go back to the communities. So if there's one thing that I like about this particular presentation is that if there are any royalties that are collected, it doesn't go into a trust fund that would go elsewhere. It is funds that goes back to the community. So that's just a comment. Thank you, Jean.
Oh, I bet you're looking in on the chair as you put your hand up. Honourable Mayi.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chairperson. I think I've got just a few questions, which are not more than two. I think in terms of the presentation, we've been exposed to the international experiences and also what is prescribed internationally and in the continent. But also bear in mind that South Africa has got its own history. And in terms of that particular history, some of the cultural tradition, the values were undermined. And as we speak now, we are in the process of transition as a country. And we have not managed to undo all the damage that has been done during the colonial years. But what is fundamental in terms of what is presented, that there seems to be an impression that is created that South Africa, although we are part of the commitments at an international level, there seems to be a kind of a grey area in terms of who we are, but also in terms of our uniqueness as a country, as a nation. I don't think that South Africa, I think one of the examples, we've got 11 languages. And if we go to those 11 languages and those cultural dynamics, for instance, I'm a Xhosa. Within the Xhosa, you've got different streams of clans. You've got your Hatebe, you've got Kabas, yes. But even if you go to some of those clans within the Xhosa, you find that there are certain unique cultural values. And how do you manage some of those imperatives vis-a-vis what you present at an international level? To me, I just want to really get a sense as to how to ensure that whatever which is being done does not seek to distort who we are, where we're coming from. Because when we go to the international stage, we go with different countries with an aspect of the questions of we are an independent nation, but amongst other nations of the world. I think the last issue is the process of preserving, because of commercialization. It's a fact that if you go to a number of areas now in Kandana, I will make an example, recently, the Inguni car was smashed by some foreigners, which I've not mentioned. How do you manage some of those situations? Because of ignorance, or let me not say ignorance, people are not enlightened in terms of the commercial aspect. But you've got those people who are advanced who would come and seek to ensure that they steal what belong to those communities. It happens a lot in certain aspects or areas in the Eastern Cape, the areas of Tala, Mayopots and Jobs. And how do you manage some of those situations? Thank you.
Thank you,
Thank you very much. Does anyone else on the committee side right now who's not tabling the bill, but just on sitting on the committee side, wish to make a comment or ask any question for clarification? Yes, Honourable Swanner, please.
Well, Chairperson, just a question of clarification. I look under the test, legislation is necessary under the IPLAF, but no legislation is necessary under the James Bill. It's on the professor's presentation on page 7. I just want to understand that, of course, in my mind, it has to be registered somewhere. Otherwise, how does a person know whether it has been that it is a protected or not protected? So there must be some form of registration. One may look at a lesser regulation than other normal commercial trademarks. I just need that clarity as to registration versus no registration.
Thank you very much. Now, Honourable James, you're sitting on that side in which you are going to speak to the bill. Would you prefer to respond to some of the questions with Professor Owen-Dean?
Yes, I mean, Professor Owen-Dean can answer most of the questions except for one, which is about whose bull disease. Yes. I introduced the bill in Parliament, and therefore it is a private member's bill under my name. But when you put together a bill, you, as anybody does, including government departments, you have attorneys who help you do that. And Professor Dean was the principal attorney and principal drafter of the bill. So, I also have help internally from the DF, as well as from Dr. Tubi. The rest of the questions,
Honourable Khadebe?
So that's what I'd like to make a follow-up. Even if the department uses the various support mechanisms, but every time they declare that this is the minute, this is the bill coming from the minister. I find it an abnormality, because in the press there, it was the issue that Professor Owen-Dean said it was his bill. That James bill is my bill. It was in the Sunday time. I want that clarity on this.
Just a minute here. I was just doing a clarification myself, but I've never seen Dr. Rob Davies' name on the bill, so that's why I needed to just clarify it, to learn that the bill I introduced from a ministry, I'm looking at the DDG as I say this, they're not introduced from yourself, DDG, are they? They're introduced from the ministry, the Minister of Trade and Industry, etc., right, whoever that is. So I think and under that process, the Minister has a team that works on the bill, as you quite rightly, I don't think there's any disagreement on that. I wasn't here at the time the question was asked, but the little I'm beginning to understand is that either a question or a statement was made that Professor Owen-Dean claimed the bill as his, and then you've responded to that, Honourable James, to say, no, it's not a question, if you like, and I'm just putting this colloquially up, the bill being Professor Owen-Dean, but rather he was perhaps the principal contributor or crafter along with others. Am I correct in understanding? I don't want to misinterpret your meaning.
No, that's absolutely right. With acknowledgement.
So I think where that probably stems from, Professor, and also Honourable James, is apparently a media report which I myself have not yet seen totally in black and white, so it may well have been electronic or otherwise, that you had indicated to media that this in fact was your bill. But as I say, I think that's what Honourable Khadebe is referring to. Now, are you satisfied your question has been responded to, Honourable Khadebi?
No, Chair. I think that if the explanation of Dr. James is reasonable, but out there, because it will set a very bad precedent that this institution is going to use its members of parliament as a conduit for the position created by individuals outside. So I don't think that this committee can leave it at that. Because it was only Sunday Times, I think it was the Honourable this year. So it was the Sunday Times, because it was there, he was quoted saying that that James bill is my bill. That's what I saw the Sunday. So I think that for the sake of the integrity of the process, if the professor didn't say that, really must write to the Sunday Times and withdraw that statement. I think that's the least we should be done.
Look, I'm going to rule on this now. I don't want to rule on something I haven't actually seen. You know, it puts me in a very difficult position. I'm going to ask you, Mr. Hermans, to get us a copy of that. All right? Electronically, Sunday Times or digital. Right, Jack, and you can respond and broadly, but I can't start entertaining the unpacking of that article, which is not before the committee per se.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not quite sure which article it is, and I'm not even sure I've read it myself, but what I do want to say, and to supplement and confirm what Dr. James said, is that I did the initial drafting of this bill, and I did it in 2010. You may recall that when the IP lab was before this committee, I appeared, in fact I appeared wearing three different hats, so I had more than one speaking turn. And when I first spoke, I advanced the argument that I believed that IP lab was not good legislation and that what is required is a so-called sui generis or customized bill. And I pursued that argument. Some while later, when I had my second speaking turn, in order to illustrate what I was referring to, what I was getting at when I spoke of a sui generis bill, I sat down and I drafted what I considered to be a sui generis bill, which I actually handed into this committee, you may recall.
Yes, which will recall what happened to it.
Well, I don't recall
that. You could not accept.
No, but the point is that I submitted it as an example of what one is talking about when you speak of a sui generis bill. 2-3 years went by. My drafting efforts lay in the floor somewhere gathering dust. When the DA decided that it would like to introduce a private members bill, and they approached me and asked if I would assist with drafting a private members bill, which I was happy to do. And I said, well, I have already a draft which I prepared 2 years ago, and I would suggest that we use this draft as the starting point for the bill which you want to introduce. And so we hauled my 2010 bill out of the bottom drawer, as it were, and we then worked on it and licked it into its present shape. So if the newspaper quoted me as saying that it was my bill, it must have, what I was referring to was that I conceptualized the bill and I did the first draft of the bill, but the decision to introduce a bill was taken totally independently by the DA. I had nothing to do with it. I'm not a member of the DA. I was simply approached by the DA saying, will you assist us in drafting a bill which we have decided should be introduced?
Now, what we want to deal with, I don't want to deal with documents that have been dusted off. So let's just now deal with the questions that have been asked. We will come back to this issue. I've just engaged here with Mr. Hermans. I'm going to consult the table. I don't want to waste now and explore that avenue at this moment. I want to say that we've had an explanation on record, which seems reasonable enough, but so does the question seem reasonable enough. But we would go down a speculative route right now without the information. All right? That's where we're leaving it right now. And let's just hope it doesn't gather dust in my drawer. But now, on the issue of there were several questions. Most unfortunately, I was not here as the questions began. But I think, Honourable James, you're aware of the questions, and so is Professor Owen Dean. So would you respond? I may have missed some of the questions, right? Thank you. So it's over to yourself, Honourable James. Okay. He'll direct you as he pleases.
Yes, that's fine. You've taken notes of what the questions were. So Professor Dean can certainly proceed to respond, as well as Dr. Kilby. So, starting with you, Owen.
Well, I'll start with the last question, the issue of registration. Registration can play two roles in this sort of situation. The first kind of registration is registration to create the right. The patent registration or trademark registration, for instance, is an example. Nothing exists until such time as you file an application and you get a registration, and that creates the right. The other kind of registration is a database or a catalogue, if you like, which is created to keep a record of facts. Now, the James Bill makes provision for that type of registration. It's a voluntary registration system. There will be a register created, and anyone who wants to lay claim to an item of traditional knowledge can go and register his property on that register. It doesn't create the property. The property is created outside of the registration system, but it provides a record. And it also carries certain advantages. For instance, it creates prima facie evidence, which can be used in a court of law, that work exists and that it is claimed that whatever community originated it and is the owner of it. So,
Honourable McIntosh, in my absence, you may have given an apology, but I didn't hear one at the time.
Okay, I unfortunately have an appointment to talk for 6 minutes, so I can't stay.
Right, because I know you're very religious about letting me know that.
No, well, I'm always sad, but sometimes I have to leave early. Yeah. And I think you can more another point.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry. Thank you.
So, IP Lab, since it is amending the Designs Act to fit traditional designs into the Designs Act, makes it necessary for registration to take place to create the right, because a design doesn't exist otherwise than by way of registration. So, under IP Lab, if you want to register a design, for instance, those shoes which I showed in the picture, you have to go to the registrar, and you have to file an application, and you have to register that design in respect of those shoes. And until that design is registered, there is no design right. Now, by contrast, the James Bill doesn't require registration of the design. It says that a design will exist automatically provided certain conditions are met. First, it must exist in a material form. There must be an article that can be shown that has that design. And then, I took note of one of the members' comments that everybody knows that a particular dress or whatever comes from a particular community. Well, that is the very criterion which is laid down in the James Bill. You will have protection for your design if everybody knows that design comes from your community. The registration, as far as the design is concerned under the James Bill, is purely a record-keeping process. The registration is not required to create the right. The right is created simply by the fact that everybody knows that the design comes from that particular community. The definition of what constitutes a community is one of the most difficult aspects of trying to legislate for traditional knowledge. Countries around the world have struggled with this concept, and we have the James Bill has a definition. IP Lab has a definition. WIPO, in its sort of treaty in making, has a definition. It's a very difficult thing to actually pin down. I'll read to you what the definition is in the James Bill. Traditional community. This term is defined to mean a natural, indigenous, and homogenous grouping of people that have a common language and customs, which exists in the Republic within an organized structure and is generally recognized as having a separate and individual character. So that is the James Bill's definition of community. The definition in IP Lab is slightly different, but it's sort of generally along those lines. So what you have is a community. Now, assuming that some grouping of traditional people feel that they have a particular item which is traditional to them and which is a is their property and is known generally to be their property, they can come forward and they can say, "This, we are a community, we fit within that definition. This is our item. It is a design or it is a copyright type work. It originated from our community, and everyone knows that it comes from our community." And that is how you would go about sorting out what can be protected and what can't be protected. It's difficult to talk about it in the abstract. You've got to start with a grouping of people saying, we've got something which is characteristic of ours and we want to protect and we believe that it fits within these definitions. The point was made that the role of the state, now the state passes legislation and in both IP Lab and in the James Bill, it is creating rights, it is creating items of property. It neither the James Bill nor the IP Lab provide for criminal sanctions, for the state to enforce the rights, in other words. Both of these pieces of legislation deal with it on a civil law basis, in the same way as the law deals with patents, trademarks, copyright, and design. The state creates the item of property, and it leaves it to the owners of that property to enforce it themselves. Obviously, they do this through the court. The state provides the mechanism for the court. So to that extent, the state is involved in assisting the rights owners to go about in enforcing their rights. There is in the James Bill a provision which says that a community can, if it chooses, delegate the enforcement of its rights, its civil law rights, to an organ of the state. And there is within the DGI a enforcement division. And it is suggested that enforcement division should be empowered, if a community so chooses, to go about enforcing those rights. This would take the burden of enforcement off the community itself. That is something which would obviously have to be negotiated with the department and so forth. But the James Bill sets up that mechanism. So the James Bill is alive to the very problem that you raise, that a community might feel somewhat helpless in going about turning these rights that have been created into commercial properties, and the assistance of the state can be enlisted in this manner. I'm not aware that the IP Lab has any similar provision to that. I really sympathize with members of the committee trying to understand all of this, because it is very complex. I mean, intellectual property law is a very complex area of the law. And I certainly tried my best in the presentations that I have made to present the issues in terms which I hope that you would be able to understand. Perhaps I haven't succeeded. But the presentation which is on the screen at the moment and which you've just been taken through, in fact, does make the comparison. For instance, the very slide that's in front of you at the moment, it tells you, if this slide tells you what has to be done for rights to be created in a traditional design under PTK, and the previous slide tells you what has to be done for rights to be created under IP Lab. So, sort of putting the two on side by side on the same page, dividing the page in half, I don't know what more can be done. But you must accept that it is a very complex issue, and it's exceedingly difficult to explain it in layman's terms. The James Bill is a self-contained document. It's if you want to know how traditional knowledge is going to be protected in terms of the James Bill, you pick up one document and you read it from start to finish, and that is all there is to know and all that is said about protection. However, under IP Lab, if you want to understand what protection is going to be given to traditional knowledge, you have to have a good understanding of the Trademarks Act, the Designs Act, the Copyright Act, the Performance Protection Act, those acts. Because what IP Lab does is it integrates these different types of properties into the existing statute, and it applies the provisions of the existing statutes. So you have to understand the existing statutes before you can understand how they are dealing with these new items. So the task is 1,000 times simpler with the James Bill than it is with the IP Lab. You know, I'm very happy to perhaps meet outside of a committee like this with individuals who would like further explanations as to, you know, what all of this means, and I would be very happy to try and do my best to explain to individuals, help them understand the provisions of these laws. But it is very complex, and quite honestly, I would think there are probably only a handful of lawyers in South Africa who understand these issues, let alone members of the public, and let alone the traditional communities. This is really one of the problems of this kind of legislation. The international situation, the way in intellectual property in general, the international system works, is that you have an international treaty which lays down the basic requirements that countries should put in their domestic laws on that particular issue. So, for instance, you have the Berne Convention, which deals with copyright. Now, the Berne Convention lays down minimum terms which, if you want to belong to the convention, those terms must be included in your domestic law. And you can go beyond, you can provide more protection than what the treaty requires, but you have to provide the minimum protection required by the treaty. So each country will then go out and pass its own law, and the convention then requires that in each country, the foreign works must be treated in exactly the same way as the domestic works. So whatever rules you make for your domestic works, and you can customize your legislation as you wish to meet your domestic requirements, but whatever rules you make for your domestic works, you have to apply to the foreign works as well, because the foreign works must enjoy what is known as national treatment. And the converse is true as well. If copyright, for example, If a South African wants to go and enforce his copyright in the United Kingdom, he has to look to the United Kingdom law. The South African law doesn't determine what rights he has in the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom law will give him national treatment. It will treat his South African work of South African origin, in exactly the same way as it treats a work of British origin. So, coming back to the issue of traditional knowledge, WIPO is attempting to set up a treaty which will, like the Berne Convention, lay down minimum requirements, the basic requirements for countries to enact into their domestic laws. And assuming that that all comes to fruition, each country will adopt its own traditional knowledge legislation in keeping with the minimum requirements of the treaty, and it will then have to, because this will be one of the terms of the treaty, it will have to provide national treatment to the foreign works. So we have a large amount of autonomy in deciding how we want to treat our traditional works, but we must then realize that one day we're going to have to grant foreign works the same protection. But whatever system we adopt has to be basically in keeping with what the WIPO treaty is going to say, because otherwise it's not going to work. You can't put into a scheme of international protection if your own statute is totally at variance and totally at odds with what is contained in the treaty and what is contained in everybody else's law. And this is one of the arguments which has been presented in favor of going the sui generis route, because that is the route in which WIPO is going. The treaty is going to expect member countries to adopt sui generis legislation. And with the result that the various countries' laws will sort of have basic similarities. But if we go the direction of IP Lab and we amend the Copyright Act, the Designs Act, the Performance Protection Act, the Trademarks Act, we're going off in a totally different direction to the way WIPO is going. We're not going to be able to fit within that treaty. And as Dr. Nkubi told you last week, we're also going to be out of kilter with what our neighboring countries are doing, because our neighboring countries are going the customized, sui generis route as well. So if we want to have a system which suits our requirements and is at the same time compatible with what is being done internationally, we've got to do it in a sui generis piece of legislation, and that is what the James Bill seeks to do. I don't know if Dr. Nkubi wants to add anything to that. Yeah, I'm just working through my notes here. I just want to come back to this point of there are certain items of traditional knowledge or cultural expression which everybody knows belongs to a particular community. Now, I mentioned that is the very criterion which is laid down in the James Bill for the recognition of these rights or granting of these rights. You can get rights in your work of folklore or your music or your artistic design if everybody knows that it comes from your community. That is the very criteria. If you read the bullet point on the screen at the last one, it must be recognized as being from and characteristic of the originating community by outside persons. So everybody, outside persons, must know that particular work or that particular design comes from that particular community. So one of the strengths, in my view, of the James Bill is that it sets as the condition or the requirement for protection the very practical test which is applied in practice. Unlike the IP Lab, which, for instance, in the case of design, there's no question here of whether it's everybody knows, whether it comes from the community. The community, if it wants to register the design, and I emphasize register, is going to have to show that the date of application, it is new. It's different from designs introduced or published anywhere in the world prior to the filing of that application. And secondly, they're going to have to show that it's original, that they're going to have to prove to perhaps the court someday that community sat down and applied its mind and used its expertise and its effort to create that design. Now that is a very much more complex and almost unworkable criterion as opposed to the criterion that everybody knows. Everybody knows that design comes from a particular community. Subject to somewhat feeling I haven't addressed questions, that's all I have to say.
I stress the point, I wasn't here right at the beginning when the questions perhaps were being raised. So members will tell me themselves if either their questions were not responded to, or whether they'd simply like to do follow-ups, they'll raise their hands at this point. So I'm not sure. Honourable Salah, is there anyone else who'd like? Honourable Waihi.
Chairperson, at the time when the presentation was made, one has not had
And I'm forgetting to glance at the document it has. And I was speaking from a point where I have not looked at what this document really says. And having looked at it now, I checked on those areas in pink which are meant to make the difference between the two documents. I find many of it being very little differences. Somewhere else, it's a matter that detail has not been given by the other side. They say the same thing, but the other document gives more detail. The other one assumes that the details might be given in definition somewhere elsewhere. Those are not much of serious stuff. I think there are three areas where there is a bit of serious stuff. One is on page 5. Page 4. On the right-hand left, on page 4, you see the pink.
Chair, if I may, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the document my colleague is referring to is this one. This is the DTI document. This is not our document.
This is not your document.
I'm sorry, it's the AFIS document.
Oh.
Okay.
From the Merriman.
Oh, by the way, yours is not, where's yours?
Well, there are two, am I correct? Let me see. There's only one, the first one.
Okay. I guess I was reading the wrong document.
All right, well, perhaps if you could just rest your case for the moment.
Chair, if I may, we do have a single page document that compares the two pieces of legislation as well. But that has not been handed out. Yeah.
And has it been given to the Portfolio Committee Secretary?
No, we have it with us.
Yeah, you see, Honourable James, as a committee member, I would have thought, as you've been one of those among all of us, you've stressed the importance of receiving such documents beforehand. And I think it's quite a serious oversight, but let us leave it for the moment because this was going to be, you know, critical engagement. And that does, as you know, that matrix. I was just saying to Ms. Hurling, it's a pity there's no matrix here, you know, that we can. But let's leave that, Honourable Wiley.
I think the issue that I wanted to raise, thanks very much for the responses. But one of the issues which is fundamental is that when we make laws, there's a particular context, both nationally, in the continent, and international. And indeed that the society and the laws are not static. The society continues to evolve. But the context of South Africa, we must take into consideration that we're not purely dealing with laws for the sake of dealing with laws. There's a particular context where there's been a history of colonialism. And therefore, as we make laws, we seek to redress the imbalances that have been created by that particular system. And as we do that, we have to ensure that the laws are understood. They are simplified in a manner that must ensure that the prime beneficiaries, because what becomes important, people must be the custodians of social change. Must not create an impression that somewhere there must be a think tank which is above the society. So that's why the state is there in terms of ensuring that we ensure that the laws are meant to empower people. But we do understand that people, because of different expertise in the society, they will play unique roles. But what becomes fundamental is that people who stand to benefit are supposed to know, are supposed to understand, so that they become creators and masters of their own destiny. They must preserve what belongs to them as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honourable Waiili. Yes, I would certainly like to clarify one or two things myself. perhaps it would have helped if I'd been here and not just reading from the document. But it was to do with the registration. Think about the different registration elements, protection, and the other one, which appeared to be no registration is required. You were explaining that to us. You know, one of the things that worries me, and you can then tell me if under this proposed, incidentally, it's not the James Bill, in the same way that we don't refer in Parliament to the Secrecy Bill, but to the Protection of State Information. This happens to be the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill, as tabled by the Honourable James. But that, on that particular bill, I want to know, for example, issues had come up with tunes being sung, which had music which had just been taken over overseas, and cost of this to try and get the international court to acknowledge that indeed the music belonged right here in South Africa, the authors were here. It was no use to have all this automatic stuff, and not even the fact that the grateful bears could recognize that this was theirs. Offer them any form. It cost us millions of state. Now, that sort of thing, sort of local rooibos tea, etc. But other points, such as the design that are done. I remember when we had the World Cup, was it the World Cup soccer, World Cup, or whatever it was? Yes, I did manage to go to a couple of games then. Well, in that one, they had this tremendous opening. Tremendous, trying to depict our life, you know, the traditional African, South African flavour. And one of them, if I recall, but I'll be corrected by all those who possibly come from, I think it is an Ndebele background, etc. It's not my background. But that one of the designs there, even I, not being from there, thought, you know, I had to get my head around it. Should I look this way or that way? Because it didn't make sense to me. And later someone was in this committee, do you remember, Honourable for Debbie, say, this design was upside down or something, or who was it? Who was it? DDG? Someone. And I said, it's funny, when I looked at this, I thought, have I had one drink too many? But no, it was too early in the evening. But can I just say, you get that now, what sort of protection is this, what is the protection of traditional knowledge going to offer here? You see, if I can get that from you. And I said, I'm suffering from the deficit of not having heard the actual presentation. Honourable James?
If I can respond to the first question, I mean, the complexity of law, that test of ordinary understanding of complex law is a test that's applied to every law. I mean, the IPLAB is as complex as the TKBE is in terms of legal complexity and legal sophistication. So the fact is that, you know, that it's a general test. It's not specific to this one. As for the question that the chair asked, if I could just ask Professor Dean to respond to that directly.
I did see it on TV. I'm not quite sure that I'm know which design I'm referring to. But one must distinguish between two things. Firstly, creating the rights, and secondly, enforcing the rights. Now, your comments about costing millions to track chase these things down overseas is really an enforcement issue. It's not germane to the creation of the rights.
The point is, it was already registered in America, and they said it was because we hadn't offered any protection here. That's why we had that. I think it was the Lion Song or something. You recall which one it was?
Yeah, I think the Lion Sleep Tonight was not part of the Soccer World Cup at all, but I mean, as I'm... Yeah, well, that was my case. I actually handled that case. So I'm well aware of what it cost. But that really illustrates the point. That song, Mbube, was protected automatically. You didn't have to register, it didn't cost a cent to obtain protection for that song. But we did. That's my, well, we did in the sense, without wanting to go into the whole history of the case, but basically what happened was that Solomon Linder wrote the song. He signed or transferred his copyright in, gave it away virtually, to Gada Record Company, and from there it went overseas. Now, when you assign copyright or any intellectual property right property, you divest yourself of it. It's like selling your house. Once you've sold your house, you have no claim to that house. It's gone. So Solomon Linder had regrettably, way back in the 1950s, assigned away his birthright, if you like, but certainly assigned away his copyright, all his rights in the song Mbube. Now, when in 2002 or 3, I think, when the whole issue arose, and it became necessary to find some way to be able to get some financial relief for Solomon Linder's family, it was, fortunately, there was a, one tends to be critical of colonial things, but there was a colonial British statute which said that where a composer assigns away his copyright in his lifetime, 25 years after his death, the copyright reverts back to his heirs. And we then relied on that colonial piece of legislation in order to sue Walt Disney in South Africa for royalties and so forth for using the song Mbube. But it really is a very good illustration of the point I'm trying to make. What we are doing here with this legislation, these bills, both IP Lab and the PT cable, is we are creating the rights and we are giving, as it were, property to the communities. Unfortunately, when it comes to enforcing those rights, they have to fit into the system. There's only one system for enforcing civil rights, and that is through the courts, and that is an expensive process. But it's for that very reason that in the PT cable, we have written in this provision which enables the community to delegate its enforcement rights to a state department. And even when that happens, the State Department will do the enforcing, which will lift the burden from the community, and presumably the community is not exactly rolling in money. So the bill is alive to the problem that enforcement can be a very expensive process, and it has addressed that very problem by creating this delegation type of situation. There isn't an equivalent provision in IP Lab. So in IP Lab, it's over to the community, unless the state owns it, of course, because there are instances where the state does. It sort of appropriates the property from the community, and in that case, of course, the state will do its own enforcement. But where the communities own the properties themselves, under IP Lab, it's left entirely up to the community to put the bill for enforcement. Well, if it's, it may well have been some sort of adaptation of a Ndebele artwork from what you describe, I think it probably was. And in that case, if the PTK bill had been in force at the time of the World Cup, the community would have been able to claim royalties for the use of that particular design. That's exactly what the bill is about, to empower communities to be able to enforce rights in their traditional works in that manner.
Although, one was true, that would not apply to the national anthem and the way it has been adapted. So, you see how this thing goes? And they'll also be talking about an adaption right. I think one of the issues that came up, not in fact from the DTI only, but from some of the submissions to the IPLAB, was, not sure how to put this diplomatically, but that it could prove insulting to a particular community. for some form of adaptation just to take place. You and I may think, well, we've all got the right to create, and therefore all I've done is adapt. I've adapted. Isn't that what the French singer did, or some singer in France some time ago with the national anthem? So, you know, where do you draw the line here, you see? So it's perhaps if you would share some, you know, some of your thoughts on that, and then perhaps come back with it, because we spent a lot of time on that, and I know that our deliberations were recorded in this particular area, and it could be quite constructive if you could have shared with us how the PTK bill, as it is, you know, protection of traditional knowledge law, had hoped to guard against that. Because on the one hand, we need to ensure that we protect this internationally and nationally, but without losing our African heritage in the process, and if you like, our Afrocentric approach to things. So, you know, how do you balance the two? Trying to protect it internationally, but, you know, keeping it here. I mean, if you look at just rooibos tea, for example, I'm quite amazed at some of the names that were dreamed up until we began to protect it, you know. And I know people who are very fond of rooibos tea took exception, and those who feel it's part of their culture, if you like. So how can they do this? This is rooibos tea. Rooibos tea, you know. So I'm just saying, those are things which, just looking through here, I didn't really understand where they were. You took them into account.
Well, the PTK bill creates property rights in what is called traditional works. That's a copyright type right, and traditional designs, which is a design type right. So a new form of property being created. Ownership of that property entails the, or enables the proprietor to exercise various rights, in exclusive rights in relation to that property. Now, in the PTK bill, these rights, and one intends in the jargon of intellectual property law to refer to it as a bundle of rights, because as a whole, literally is a bundle. This bundle includes reproduction, publication, performance in public, broadcasting, making an adaptation, and distributing copies of the work. So when the PTK bill gives you a right of property in the Ndebele design, it empowers you to control the reproduction, the making of adaptations, and so forth. And if reproductions or adaptations are made without your permission as the owner of the property, then it infringes your right, and you can sue people for that. So that, you know, that is the way the system works. You create the right, you create the property, you give content to those rights, and then your property, your right of property, enables you to have exclusive use or exclusive rights to conduct these various activities like reproduction, publication, making adaptations, distribution, etc. So it's a very, I mean, the right which the PTK bill creates in a traditional work is as good as any intellectual property right in any form, in any other form, whether it be a patent, a design, a copyright, a trademark, etc. The PTK bill is creating state-of-the-art, first-class rights in the property which is being created. You know, as I mentioned, it is a very complex subject, and if I were to give you a lecture on what it all entails from start to finish, we'd be here for about a week, so I don't know whether you have that time or even the inclination. But when I said that the consolation with the PTK bill is that you are looking at a document which is this is the bill, and everything about traditional knowledge is contained in these pages. when you're looking at the IP lab, you're looking at this. This is a compendium of the intellectual property statutes. It has 510 pages. 510 pages of the most complex law in creation virtually. And you, if you want to, you're a community and you want to understand what property is being created and what rights are going to flow from that property, you've got to go through these 500 pages as opposed to about 50 odd in the PTK book.
Perhaps just one last comment from myself. And I think I'm just looking at the members on my right. How many of you went to Geneva? I think there's only yourself sitting here at the moment, Honourable Hadebe. Yes, because as frequently as... I think we've only changed three of our members. There've been lots of turnover elsewhere. You'll recall there, and I'm sorry that some of the other members from the other parties... Yes, I said which members of the committee. Now, they are workers of the committee. They're not the members. You know, we benefit from their work. But can I... Honourable Kubasa was there. One of the issues that came out there, we tackled this whole issue of sweet generous and also where we were going with the bill. And I have been under the impression that with sweet generous, it's sweet generous boom. You know, you get a black one, you get a white one, there's no sort of grey or shades in between. I got quite a surprise to learn that there are different shades of sui generis, to put it that way. There are many, many different types of sui generis. And when we decided, this bill was very complicated. It took us a long time to process, I'm sure you heard. We held several workshops, and one of them was in Mark's building, where we brought people in from overseas. We said, we do not want the department advising us on this. We brought people in, two or three of them. We brought people here, not people who were supporting this idea per se. And they were asked to contribute. This was it. We were having challenges here with this piece of legislation. And when we closed off, someone in one of the opposition parties said, it would be interesting to know now which some of the professors, well, in fact, all those who've made an input here, what do they actually support? And the one fellow who had totally defended our bill, etc., said, well, look, in a way I support the sui generis approach. So we thought, okay. He said, but just a minute. And we'd heard this in Geneva before, so we weren't that surprised when he said, I support just this approach, which is closely linked to yours. And for you to understand, Chair, the different ways you can approach sui generis, I'd need to spend at least a day here. I don't know if you recall that comment. And I said, well, where? And he said, no, there's nothing wrong with your bill going this direction. And that's what I'm trying to explain. That's why when you asked me, what do I, and I said, no. Here's the bill. I'm not dictating to you. I chose to go in the opposite direction, etc. And when I looked at this in the light of what he had to say and the books we were given very kindly by let's forget the one institute we visited, I'm not yet convinced, let me be frank with you, not yet. I mean, we've still got some way to go to hear from everyone and for our members to study this. None of them have seen this before, none of us. This may be the right approach to have gone, the right sui generis route, if you like. So I think certainly from myself, I'm going to need a great deal more persuasion than what I've heard here. I've heard your input a little now, and I've seen a little bit of the material. And I have also, as you know, attended a workshop, which I know you were also present some time ago, in fact. And other members here, not all of them are even familiar with the IPLAB. I think Honourable Sring is not. Honourable Swanepoel's obviously not. I'm not too sure about Honourable Waili or even Honourable Satori. Am I right, Honourable Satori? You may not be familiar with the IPLAB. It's probably four of us who are, and when the others are here, they may be, and the others are two other members. Honourable Hill Lewis would not be familiar with it, am I right, Honourable James? With the IPLAB, yeah.
You can't speak for you.
Now, and I'm thinking of when he joined us. Yeah. I'm talking of those who've been in the process for so long. But what I can say is certainly you put a new angle on it. You're coming with something fresh. Acknowledge that. It is something fresh. And we do need to engage more. And unless members want to ask one or two questions here, I'm looking at members again, I want to outline a process, because I very much like that document you have, Honourable James, emailed. Is it on email? It's one page to Mr. Hermans, so that he can make it available to members as soon as possible, like tonight. And what I want to suggest, we can still go on, you can engage us more, I'm not stopping you, but just so that you're aware, I want to look at a situation where tomorrow we would have, for example, 100, now people aren't worth walking out, good. The moment they hear my voice, they start walking out. It's Friday. The deliberation on the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill. I wondered the, I think this is from yourself, Honourable Edward van der Merwe, is it? Now, this is a sort of beige and green, is it? Now, the advocate van der Merwe has been able to study this perhaps for as long as we have as a committee, and she's prepared something which, and she is our parliamentary legal advisor, and which we are taking aside here or aside there, has prepared, prepared a little matrix, giving it from a legal perspective, as it were, for our benefit. So that's what I would like to do tomorrow. And I'd like you to be here, Professor, if possible. Certainly the Honourable James should be here. And should one would have liked Professor Ngubi to be here from the Department of Commercial Law. And the DTI will be responding on Tuesday. I hope I'm right here from the schedule I've been given. Tuesday the 29th. I am sure that the DDD has had an opportunity to engage with the Secretary. So I'd be surprised if staff are not aware. All right. So that's the MacDoss approach. But we do still have time left. But I wanted you to get an idea as to how we're looking at it. As I said, you've got a long journey to walk, Professor Dean.
May I just respond to some of your most recent comments, and more particularly the whole idea of what is sui generis? I'm actually quite surprised to hear that somebody thinks that there are more than one type of sui generis. I suppose it depends how you analyze these things, but the way in which the term is used in this context is to denote a bill which is custom designed to deal with a specific type of property, namely traditional knowledge. Now, just to illustrate this, let me give you this example. The very first intellectual property statute that saw the light of day was the Patents Act. That happened in about the 1700s somewhere. Along came copyright. Now, both patents and copyright are intellectual property. The lawmakers at the time could have said, well, we've got an intellectual property bill, we've got a Patents Act, so why don't we just amend the Patents Act to incorporate provisions relating to copyright? And then along came the Trademarks Act. And the lawmakers could have said, well, why don't we just amend the Patents Act to cover trademarks as well? And then along came the Designs Act. And a similar comment could have been made. But no, the lawmakers were wise, and they said, copyright is fundamentally different to a patent. So we can't really deal with copyright in the Patents Act. What we need is a special copyright act which identifies copyright for what it is, and it makes rules and regulations, and it has provisions which are appropriate to copyright. So we create a sui generis act, namely the Copyright Act. And the same process happened with the Designs Act. Designs have a lot in common with patents. But even so, the lawmakers in their wisdom, and I emphasize wisdom, said, no, although there are similarities between patents and designs, we think that the better approach is to design a piece of legislation which deals specifically with this new animal with its own characteristics, its own behavioral traits. It must be dealt with separately, so we create a sui generis design act. Now what the PTK bill is doing is simply carrying that process forward. There is a new animal has arrived in the field of intellectual property, and in the same way as you didn't amend the Patents Act to cover copyright, so you don't amend the existing acts to cover DK, because it is a separate animal. It has its own characteristics. For instance, novelty is a requirement for a design, and there's no way a traditional design can meet the requirement of novelty. So it doesn't help to shove a traditional design into the Designs Act when it can't meet the basic principles for design law. So you create a special sui generis, customized piece of legislation which addresses traditional knowledge for what it is, a new kid on the block. A new kid on the block needs to have its own rules and regulations. And that's what we mean by sui generis. It's a statute, a standalone statute, which addresses the particular type of property which you are going to create. It addresses the peculiarities, the nature, and all the circumstances of that new type of property. And you can't do that by shoving it into another intellectual property statute. It simply doesn't work. Now, that has been said over and over and again by virtually the whole intellectual property community in South Africa, from Judge Harms, Deputy President of the Supreme Court of Appeal, down to lecturers at universities and practitioners, with one or two exceptions, I must add, but the vast majority have come forward and said, this IP lab is fundamentally flawed. You cannot deal with this new animal, traditional knowledge, by shoving it into one of the existing statutes. You have to follow the same pattern that was followed when the Copyright Act was drafted, the Designs Act was drafted, the Trademarks Act was drafted. You have to create a custom-made piece of legislation which deals properly with that new type of property. And that is what is meant by sui generis, and that is the approach which is being adopted worldwide. And by WIPO itself, and that is borne out by that WIPO report, which I quoted very briefly from at the previous meeting, but the WIPO came out unambiguously and said, sui generis is the way to go. We are deluding ourselves if we think that we, unlike anyone else in the world, can achieve proper protection for traditional knowledge by shoving the square peg into the round hole and putting it into the Patents Act, sorry, not the Patents Act, the Copyright Act, the Designs Act, and the Trademark Act, and the Performance Protection Act. It simply does not work. Judge Harms has said that the IP lab is fundamentally flawed, and that is what he means by fundamentally flawed. He says it's fundamentally flawed because you're trying to achieve the impossible. You are trying to protect something in a statute which was not designed for that type of property. It was designed for something totally different. And I come back to the point which perhaps I have said ad nauseum, that sui generis is the only route to go.
You've spoken with conviction. Thank you. Honourable Paul James.
Yes, this is an odd circumstance because normally, as we know, legislation is introduced by ministries and they come with their teams and so on and so on. And so I introduced this bill, the TKB bill. What I did in the first session was make the case for it in the presentation, and the committee listened to that. In the second instance, since it was published for comment, we reviewed the comments in the last session. And you will remember that all the comments we received supported the sui generis approach. There was one or two criticisms and one to two who did not go along with this, but the vast majority, including sections of our government, the units in the Department of Science and Technology, to the Competitions Commission and stuff, overwhelming, compelling support for this approach. And the reason why that's so, we just heard today, is that if we want to protect traditional knowledge in a way that's robust, in a way that's legally defensible, in a way that is simple, in a way that would ensure that the royalties that are paid end up where they're supposed to be paid, to the communities, that the design of the legislation is consistent with what I've introduced. So I made that case. What we've now gone into is a comparison, which is obviously proper, but the case should be made firstly on its own merits, and then secondly is to compare it with the IP-LIB, because we had two similar pieces of legislation. Madam Chair, I wanted to point out that this one page that I referred to was not intended to be handed out. We happened to bring it along because it was a useful summary for us. But now that you requested it, we will send it by email tonight. I also wanted to point out in terms of tomorrow's session that Professor Dean, because he has a full-time job, and Dr. Kubu also has a full-time job, will not be able to be here tomorrow. So you, just for you to let you know that.
You see, Honourable James, it's very difficult for us at this time of the year to work around everyone's schedules, as you know. And I think you've known for some time that we have the spillover on Friday. And in the past, when that has arisen, once with the company spill, we actually requested the professor try and we adjusted the timing on the day, as it were, on the morning, to try and get the professor here. Of course, the professor being at Cape Town University may have been closer, but I'm just saying, you know, we really can't just do it this and that way. Even with our own consultants, we've had to insist that they are here for certain times. We don't have much time left. I think you know yourself when we're closing Parliament this year. I think you've been made aware of that. So it is important for us to try and make a start. What is always to our benefit is that there is a hand start. There is a hand start. That is a word-for-word transcription. But what we are going to do, so it's not going to be that easy to change from tomorrow. What the only thing we've done in the past, as you are well aware, we have been able to start earlier. In other words, start at 8 and 8:30. That's what we've done to accommodate people who've had a certain challenge. And this has been the same sort of thing. Consultants who have been full-time employed, usually at academic establishments.
May I just interpose?
Yes.
Because I feel strongly about this matter, I will cancel my other arrangements for tomorrow to make myself available, but I probably won't be able to get you before about 10 o'clock, if that is...
Let me just consult the program for one moment. And then we are going, GTI will be coming up to the front to make some brief comments, and that will also, I think, be helpful. Where are we, Mr. Hermes, where is this Friday? We can almost meet you halfway. We are going to start off with the trade report, okay, and something else. But we would have liked, not to have delayed this after 9:45. So let's try and persuade you to do your best without breaking the law. you know. I mean, I don't want to hear that I've told you to speed. You know, get a helicopter or something. No, we'll obviously, we'll try and meet you in that particular manner and work from there. And I think Honourable James knows only too well how challenging the timing is. And we've got Thursday nights, I'm aware of that, but it's not always that easy either. You will recall, Honourable James, we once met until 11 o'clock one Thursday and made many errors on the bill. So we had to go back to them the next morning. Right. And there weren't errors ANC made either. So, and neither did the DA, but we won't expand on all of that debate call. But may I thank all of you from the Protection of Traditional Knowledge, I hope I got it right, Bill, for being with us this evening. You're welcome to stay now while the DTI itself comments, and I would hope you would, all of you. Honourable James, would you like to change to that side, please? And Professor Owen Dean, can I ask you to sit where Professor, where Honourable James is sitting now, where he gets up, if you would sit there. And then DDG, you're very welcome, Santuli, and Mr. Nyesi Tenzi, and the rest of that team. Is that Mr. Nkwana? I never know that the MC, difficult one for me, Director of Commercial Law and Policy. Would you pronounce your name for me when you get down mic? See, the Ntuli one is so much easier for my tongue. By the way, as this change is taking place, please get your victuals.
Food.
To understand how we need to be dealing with it
because when we looked at the issues that are being raised in the bill, we found that there aren't new issues. These are the issues that we dealt with in 2010. The very same arguments that we dealt with in 2010. But I think on our side, we were grateful to the committee in the manner that they processed the bill that we presented at the time, in a sense that the committee went out and got experts to come and advise. And those experts were drawn from various areas, and including people that are practitioners in the area of traditional knowledge, people that work in that space. And I think it was a comprehensive process. And we, as I say, we were confused in terms of how we're going to approach this, because what we're going to say today is perhaps what you've heard us saying. And we'll try to be on point and specific, because otherwise you would have heard this, except for a few members, like Honourable Swanny, who are not here, and Honourable Woodman. James was also not here. I think we had Honourable Harris and Honourable Smart, and Honourable Thing was not here. So Chair, I think we really went through a really rigorous process. A lot of arguments were made, and I think we're at the point where we now can isolate the issues. We'll not deal with everything, and you also note that we don't get into the technicality of the bill, because for us, we want to address the fundamental issues, which are the policy issues. That is why we are. If we get into the technicality of the bill, then it would suggest that we actually think that the approach that is being taken in this bill is the correct approach. We actually don't think it's the correct approach, and we stand by that. But we just want to also, I think personally, you've referred to an example that I gave at the time when we were talking about this bill around the use of the Ndebele designs and the extent to which some of these things could be very offensive. But when we raised that thing, it was from a perspective of showing the importance of actually taking steps to overprotection as the state. Because when you introduce legislation, you don't introduce it because it's a nice thing to have. You introduce it because there's a problem. So there are a number of problems. We gave examples at the time, and I'm sure that my colleagues here would help to give those examples which we gave, which highlight why we need to take the approach that we're taking. And today I was sitting here, and I was very proud that I actually had to sit through this presentation, because the whole presentation has got pictures that come from my culture. Mm-hmm. And then proudly so, as a development, I'm proud to see all of these examples, colorful, very beautiful pictures. But again, Chair, it is actually very sad that I cannot see any acknowledgement in any of these pictures. I don't even know where these pictures are coming from. I don't know who took them. So I don't know where the rights are. Obviously, as the developer community, we've never received any royalties from Christian Louboutin for the shoes and this design. So I'm not sure. So that basically just indicates we don't even know where this is registered. We don't even know where it's in Europe. But the point I'm making is that the origin of this is very clear. So and I'm sitting here as a proud developer woman, but I don't even know if these people know that some of the designs, you cannot use them. There are designs that can only be used, for instance, by the royal family. You can see it can be beautiful there, but you cannot use it anyhow. So I don't want to sit here and start talking about the traditional knowledge of my community. But I'm just putting a point here that some of these things are very sensitive, but I do believe that as we sit here, from a policy perspective as government, we do understand why this is important. We do understand why this is necessary. And we do understand why this government adopted policies to address this issue. And I think as McDonald and Simpiu will take you through the presentation, we'll be able to highlight some of those issues. Chair, there are things that I must say upfront, which we also found that they a bit confusing for us, but maybe as the Honourable Member James would have an opportunity to maybe respond to that at the time that the committee can allow. But we do find that in the documents that are circulated, there are documents that are documents of the department which were said to be confidential documents and not for public circulation. And those documents are in circulation. So just in regards to that, I think it's there is a report from FBP, which was a RIA report. This issue was discussed in this committee, and the department did clarify its position in relation to that. And we did address the committee fully on that particular relationship with the SDP. But what we find is that the document that is the document of the department that is circulating outside. So maybe if, you know, clarification can be given in terms of where the permission for this document to be circulated was obtained, because there are obviously consequences for us in terms of our contractual relationships with the service providers or consultants that we contract from time to time. And I think our position on that one was very clear, Chair. So it's just one issue that we thought we could just put on the table. Maybe if it's clarified, then we would understand how those documents were circulated.
PG, are you referring only to RIA? Because I hear you referring to that, but also using the plural.
In particular, it is the RIA document that we have seen, have noticed in the pile of documents that we have, which has been circulated, and we do not remember the permission granted to circulate that. So the other thing that I just want to say before the team expand on these issues is in our presentation when we proposed the bill to amend the intellectual property laws, we did indicate that there can be other mechanisms that can complement this. But the whole intention of the DDI in terms of its mandate is to deal with the commercialization aspect of intellectual property and to seek to protect IK from that perspective. And we did indicate that the complementarity of systems is not a problem. We can work together to link some of those things so that there is proper coordination. So we were never at any point under the impression that the intellectual property system will protect fully all the other areas relating to IK. And when we said that, we indicated that there may be a need to develop a legislation which could come from a Department of Arts or Department of Science and Technology that specifically zoom into the issues that cannot be sufficiently protected through the intellectual property system. So that bill we haven't seen yet from the departments that, yes, that we are expecting to see it from. And this has been a process, and I think McDonald's will also just give a background as to that process, where it started and how we actually ended with this bill, with the various departments, with different mandates that have got a link to intellectual property. So, Chair, in what I'm saying is, whenever, at any point, under the illusion that the intellectual property is going to resolve everything that has got to do with indigenous knowledge. But the one thing that was clear in our presentation on the needs analysis was that the intellectual property system is the one used to exploit our indigenous knowledge. So you need to close that gap. So if it is the one that is used, because they take that particular knowledge and they register it as a trademark, either as designs and all of that, but then when you're supposed to then acknowledge it and recognize it as such, then they tell you it doesn't fit. We've heard those arguments, and we have said as a department that from a policy perspective, every law is informed by the consensus. Every law is meant to remedy a particular issue that exists, which is a problem. So if in whatever year that we adopted our intellectual property laws, we've said it, they're outdated. We've said it ourselves. You'll see it in our IT policy, that the IT policy that in circulation for public comments. Our legislation is outdated. It should have been updated from a long time back. It's outdated. So if you look at when in the 70s these laws were were adopted. They were seeking to address a particular instance in those times. At the moment, we want to make sure that these laws address the problems that we are experiencing. IK in South Africa has been stolen and continues to be stolen. And the more we delay in putting remedies to prevent that, I think we are just putting our old people in a disadvantage. And it is for that reason, Chair, that despite our acknowledgement that our IP law needs to be updated, we decided to expedite certain areas. You'll recall that the Patents Amendment, the Patents Act was amended to try and protect as a matter of urgency because people were dealing to the detriment of this country. And then we said that all of these other laws, we must amend them so that we can then close that loop. So it is for that reason that we expedited them. And so we are saddened by the fact that obviously that it gets to be delayed, but obviously for valid reasons, so it has got to go through all these processes. But while we wait, the theft is continuing. And there's no protection whatsoever for our people. So, Chair, I would also move to the third point, which is the issues around the WIPO, the development at WIPO. I must just say that as the Department of Trade and Industry, and specifically through my division, we pay the subscription to WIPO. We pay the membership. We sign off every year. So the country's membership in regards to WIPO is our responsibility. We are aware of the processes at WIPO. The issue about in IK at WIPO, there was an impasse since 2000. We indicated that when we came here. Since 2000. To date, there is still no resolution on that issue. Although there was an agreement to start, you know, working on text, you know, that will inform that instrument so that we can see what that instrument is going to be. That still has not happened yet. But the processes are continuing, and we are part and parcel of those processes, and we are in support of those processes. But to say that there is an agreement at WIPO to go a particular route, that would be misleading to the committee. So we just want to make sure that the committee is aware that we are keeping abreast of this development. And at some point it was mentioned that WIPO supported or opposed the approach that we were taking as the country. And this committee went into Geneva. They never came with that submission. There was no submission. We never saw any submission like that. So I think as much as I think it's important to make a case for something, I think it is important for us to focus on the merits of what is being proposed as opposed to other things that really are not true. So we are clear about that. The WIPO process is our process. We are in control of it because we are responsible for that membership as the Department of Trade and Industry, as the lead department on intellectual property issues. Chair, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Nechitenzi to touch on the issue that we want to comment on. And Chair, we hope that we won't take too much of your time, but we want to address all of the issues that we want to address. And I will come back later, Chair, just to sum up on the team's input.
Thanks, DDG and my colleague and the chairperson and members of the committee. Let me take maybe 5 minutes to say something because opportunity may not come. We have read the bill. It's additional knowledge, this one. We have read ours, which happens to be the bill of this committee. Because, I mean, there was a drafting. In terms of the constitution, because we redrafted that bill, in a way, it's no longer the department's one. So that's why we came here by invitation. So that is my process. When we started with that bill of the DCI, which was flawed, and we thought it would have to be improved, we went to NEDLAC. NEDLAC commented,
and then almost 98% there was an agreement. And the report was read here by the executive director. Going further, Dr. Owen Dean came with a bill, which today he said is an improvement. This one is an improvement on that. And then officially, I don't want to mislead this committee. Please take aside this, I'm starting to mislead. That bill was rejected. And this one is just an improvement. So we won't go into the demerit or merit of it. But we're saying, we are reminding this committee what happened. And then maybe thirdly, at WIPO in 2000, a letter was written from UNEP, United Nations Environmental Programme, to say there is a problem that when these professors are engaged or enlisted to assist communities, whether it's in malaria or whatever, there is a problem that there is a patent that has been stolen by the professors. They run to CIPA or CPIC equivalents and register, and they no longer share the benefit with the community where they learned about the innovation. So therefore, the issue of traditional knowledge or the issue of protecting indigenous knowledge, it started because of that. It is not only at WIPO. It also went to the Food and Agriculture Organization. And they were still having undertaking on international treaty on the protection of agriculture and genetic resources. And they concluded in that area, FAO, Food and Agriculture Organization, they concluded to say, yes, indigenous knowledge can be protected through the intellectual property. The treaty is there. I'm talking about agricultural issues. Yes. So, the issue of protecting traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge is not only peculiar to intellectual property, as the DDG has said. It can come from various areas. You call it a law of special kind, whether it's Latin or Greek, I don't know, sui generis. You can term it whatever you want, but all in all is that we have chosen deliberately to approach this parliament to talk to the intellectual property where it interfaces with indigenous knowledge or traditional knowledge or folklore. We can go philosophical. The difference between traditional knowledge, indigenous knowledge, folklore is complex. To say it depends on the nation itself, what term it wants to use. Let me go off ramp a little bit. Folk, what's a folk? Folk, it may mean a clan or a nation or whatever. Law may mean something, storytelling, or a little culture. So what is the little culture of approaching healing AIDS, as an example? You may say folk. So I'm not here with this national problem for traditional knowledge. When we started the IP policy protecting indigenous knowledge, we started with the word traditional knowledge. But we were reminded by the Department of Arts, Culture, Science and Technology to say the policy that has been approved in 2004 talks about indigenous knowledge. Therefore, adapt traditional knowledge or change traditional knowledge to indigenous knowledge. So there is no issue there. It is a choice that we need. So in 2000, we started, I'm saying we, I was still young then, we started a process. Yes, can reveal my age then. Then we started a process. It was an interdepartmental committee led by the Department of Arts, Science and Technology. By then, there was still one. To deal with the issue of protecting indigenous knowledge or traditional knowledge. And I wrote two chapters there. we can go into the document. And then in that document, what is interesting is that each department is given a mandate to protect indigenous or traditional knowledge according to its own mandate, without taking the mandate of another department. So what is the mandate of the DTI? It's intellectual property. Is there a problem between traditional knowledge and intellectual property? Yes, there is a problem. Here in the Ndebele issue, the Ndebele are not appreciated, or royalty, or just to be acknowledged. So it is exactly on that point that we are here, to say protect that. Nobody should do that. If it's an American or a French who is doing that, then here in South Africa, they should not expect us to protect their water, to protect their traditional knowledge. So that's why we are here. So in 2004, everybody went outside that room after Cabinet has adopted the 2004 Indigenous Knowledge Systems to say, go and protect traditional knowledge. During the Science Week, we talk at DTI, Arts and Culture Talk, another department, environmental affairs, they will talk on biodiversity, and then we'll talk about the Patent Act that we changed in 2005 in order to complement. So there should be no illusion that we want to say this bill, that is the DTI Parliament bill, wants to be, panacea? Is it panacea or panacea? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Latinos didn't have a pain. See, you as a pain.
I wouldn't worry about that. It's just effort and
I. Yeah, no problem. So, that panacea. Okay, panacea. Okay, that one. So, we went out and in 2007, guided by the IKS, we wrote the policy on traditional knowledge or protection of traditional knowledge through the intellectual property system. That was the name. It's a long name. Because of that mandate. Yes. So we came here. And then I think that we should be clear. Why? Actually, when we started in 2004, developed countries were saying, please, go and do something at home so that we can have all the experiences and later we come internationally. And then, I'm not ready. My studies is international. I don't believe that you can go and negotiate without having a national position. You must first go to your house first and then go internationally. So that's where we come from. So we came back really from Waibo, and then we came with this policy, and then came with this bill. And then you go to Waibo, they don't have even a thing today, but they have got a voluminous head that can guide you. So we cannot be bound by something which is still perceived. There is nothing at Waibo except voluminous things to guide us that the intellectual property system can protect the exploitation or bioforest of traditional knowledge. So I think the problem is becoming secretious, and then we need to close on this issue. In the rare issues, this document that is circulation, we will hear the response. The mandate was to say, go and find out the benefits, the regulatory impact assessment. Our benefits outweighing, outweighing costs, or vice versa. And then because we're working together, when they reach a conclusion, without evidence, we said, it is difficult to appreciate a document. That's an example. We say, we gave you one term of reference to say, rooibos. Can you give us a value chain of the rooibos? According to us, we are exporting rooibos to the Americas, as well as to Europe, in particular Germany. And then this is the quantification of the benefit by reading articles in the value chain. But in your document, you are even not coming with a sense that we are getting from this exportation, you know. So, go to South India. There is a shrub called South India. There is also honey bush. These are the articles that we are reading. This is the value that we are getting. And that's why we give 2 million to the Khoisan and Dutch defendants to defend the rebels for cancellation when it was registered in the U.S. because we know the benefit. But this study was going haywire now. And then we said, oh, we will come with our own rear, blah, 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 blah. We are not accepting it. But it is in segregation, and then I don't know the basis because the terms of reference were guiding them to say, go and find out whether rooibos is, which is traditional knowledge. You know they bribe it, the Khoisan descendants. And then they send it outside. And then it gives us rooibos for whatever. So all in all, we are saying, WIPO is... Its mandate is a UN agency. Its mandate is intellectual property, nothing else. So dealing with generics, for us, I think, why, as a member state, we will say it in a correct form. It is not within its mandate. Its mandate is intellectual property, not generics. So generics will deal with my other heritage and other organizations. We will say it in a correct forum. I'm not saying you should express an opinion, but you see it is a membership. So all in all is that we wanted to come with this background. And again, we have a problem when this parliament said, DTI, your bill is flawed a little bit. Let's have a committee of experts. And then you employ somebody from the University of Cape Town, a lady, I've forgotten the name, Von Braun, I'm told, yes, from the University of Cape Town. So personally, if I were a judge of the doctor, or when he knows that I was a legal judge of trademark, I was going to demand to say, of the two experts in the same university, what is not happening, or what is happening? So we went to the CIPI, the South African Institute of Intellectual Property. These are the lawyers in South Africa practicing in intellectual property. You, as Parliament, you requested a person to be represent that institution. That was what is it? Tshepo Chabangu, Chalangu, yeah. Yes. So when we hear that institutions like CIPL, as an example, has rejected the bill. Maybe they rejected the so-called DTI one. When we went to redraft, I thought I will pronounce and say, no, you were represented in that committee of inspection. And therefore, those debates are no longer relevant. If it was me, I was going to pronounce on that. So I'm just ventilating. Allow me to ventilate on this issue. So...
are we just, I know that was the background, but are we going to move to about page 4 on the actual presentation? Am I not more audience? Yeah.
No problem. So, thanks, Jeff. So, when we hear that the judges are rejected this thing, we should not just choose one judge because we like the judge. I mean, in law, that's the beauty of the law. There is a majority judgment and a minority judgment. The majority judgment today may not be the law tomorrow. Yes, if we can approach it in this way. So there is Judge Harams, who is entitled to his opinion. There is also Judge Salam of the Salam Commission, Marikana. Yes. He advises the minister. He served in the 80 Appellate Division. Judge Harams became the deputy, what is it, president, probably on marriage, but there is one position for deputy president. So Judge Falam was an AG judge until he retired. He gave an opinion here to say it is possible to protect traditional knowledge using indigenous knowledge. So let's say the two judges are judging this case. That somehow Judge Harams is 2-in-1. So there is a minority judgment or there are two different schools of thought, because this bill was never taken to the Constitutional Court for certification. It was not done. If it were done, probably the two judges were going to express a view then. But it never went there. So therefore, when we quote authorities, it's better to quote all of them and say, by my view, I incline to agree with this one. But don't give us only one-sided story. I'm just advising Parliament if it wants my advice. So all in all is that we gave a stream of countries that use traditional, intellectual property to protect traditional knowledge. On the derivatives are issues that are taken from the original to form a new thing, but you innovate and you come with something new. You have intellectual property over that. And then according to our bill, the Bill of Parliament now, is that you can form contemporary thing, but you should appreciate and royalties to the relevant authorities. I think that is what that point is. And then without posing a question, I fail to see the same clause of appreciating the local communities in this bill. In other words, if we pass this bill, the private members bill, if we pass it, stand alone, this biopiracy won't be stopped. And we're saying the house is leaking, I've diagnosed it, now I've called the technician to repair it, and then don't deflect my attention to other issues. I'm saying the house is leaking, let's patch that thing. But by patching that thing, we are not saying the Department of Agriculture cannot pass another legislation to deal with the same issue in a complementarity way. We are not saying that. So all in all is that our list that we gave to the Secretariat, probably tomorrow, please, just click somewhere and give us a list of those countries that we gave to indicate that intellectual property can protect traditional knowledge. And then, going to the issue of maybe copyrights again, it is not necessarily true that everything has to be reduced into writing, materiality. We gave documents to this committee. We gave the UNESCO. We gave something from Indonesia to indicate where they were critiquing the issue of copyright in relation to traditional knowledge, to say not everything has to be in writing. I've forgotten the number or article of the Berne Convention itself, where it says, we gave it to the Secretariat, the Berne Convention, there are areas where you don't have to reduce everything into writing. So in other words, I'm saying, if you are lawyering correctly, give everything to the judge, and the judge will have to pronounce. But you don't give one-sided, as if the other school of thought does not exist. I think that's what I'm doing here. So, the issue of traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge, we are saying it is standalone as it is, and it is an intellectual property standalone. But the moment you want to use something from this, then we must talk a different language. And the state, it's not true that the state is not protecting. We don't want informal arrangement. The power relations are not the same. We debated this issue. Power relations are not the same. It happens in Dikeni. You will not know where Dikeni is. Dikeni is Alice next to Fort Hare. There is a closer community, Masakani, that works on a shrub. And that shrub, when it is eased, it gives a lot of self-medication. And then they were working with Nestle. Nestle? Schwabe? No. The Germans. And then they went to Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And then they patented. without telling that legal community. And that legal community came here. It came during our. And then they asked the state to assist us in the negotiation. So therefore, what happens is that we would not like the informal arrangement between the communities and the multinational. It's not only multinational. For your information, Rooibos was registered in the US by a South African, not by a multinational, a South African. So therefore, we are not looking at multinational, black, white, whatever. People are stealing some people's intellectual property. And then we want to close that gap. I think that's what we are doing. So I don't know which page I am, but the list of countries, whether Tunisia, whether it's Oapi is a, what is it, a French, it's a French what acronym that means the regional arrangement of all Francophone countries in the protection of intellectual property, Oapi. And then the British one is Aripo. So Aripo is a non-starter compared to Oapi. Oapi, they protect it. They protect it at regional level. They also allow the issue of licensing. But when it expires, that issue of a contemporary one, it has to go back to the original community. So all in all is that these arguments are becoming circuitous. In the presentation, maybe Mkherazi will do two slides or three, but we didn't want to compare the two because it's not our function to compare the two to say which one is best. We are pushing the intellectual property to say it is being used to steal the intellectual property of the so-called traditional or local community. And therefore, let's nip it. That's all what we are saying.
I wonder if we could ask you, Chief Director, just on that note. Unfortunately, because I've got a slide one per page because of my own eyesight, just like to see which one this is. What I was going to ask you to perhaps just briefly go over is, I think it's page, what is it? Page six. And just while that's happening, I just want to remind members, I thought we'd made it clear that there are really only two people sitting here, or three of us, who were, you know, in on the IPLAB, because when we think it started in 2010 with us, I'm not saying when it started happening with the departments and processing, but when it hit us. And you can see 2010, 2011, 2012, and then came back to, who was here then, you see? So that's the majority of you weren't here, I can tell you. So what, to reassure you all, I've asked Mr. Herman, let's see what we can do to make some packs available. So I don't want you now to feel you're lost, and, you know, because not everyone, and that's why I think in some ways, Mr. Nietzsche, Denzi thought it advisable to give that. There's only three of us sitting here who know this whole background. So, we do appreciate that. But I thought if you just go back on this one and just highlight a few things for us there, it would be quite helpful, yeah.
No, thanks.
So basically, like, starting off with private members' bills issue, more or less. I'm just looking at what we've got here. Because to my own mind, maybe are the proposed measures under the IP, in a way we dealt with that, and the other. What we have, you know, if you just start off here, and even that I think you've dealt with the private people, to come to traditional works, which isn't there.
Yes. No, thanks. I will request my colleague to take you through, but let me read these objectives as you requested. The objective.
I think it would be very helpful to us, especially for you members, that us to be straightforward. From the traditional works, which starts off, condition for protection is contained in Chapter 1, Section 2 of the bill.
Yes.
If that's
possible. I will request my colleagues to go.
Oh, thanks. Okay.
Thank you.
But I do appreciate that background. I mean, some of us do remember it because we've been so long on it ourselves. Not as long as yourself, though.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, member. And thanks, everyone. I will be talking to the private members that have been introduced as it was published in the government gazette. The view is that this the private members bill seeking to introduce a new category of intellectual property. And the policy, the 2007 policy as well, is looking at the indigenous knowledge as intellectual property, because when misappropriation takes place, the intellectual property laws are used as well. So it's not something which is unique, it's part of the normal intellectual property system. And also the bill seeks to establish a new registration office of traditional knowledge. What we have currently is we've got tried and tested methods of protecting intellectual property, so why not stick to those? We are sticking to those methods of protecting intellectual property as we have it, and there are enforcement, there is enforcement legislation in place actually to make sure that whenever there's infringement of intellectual property, we will definitely be able to enforce and make sure that those who infringe will be brought to book. But then going further on, the private members bill talks of conditions for protection, for the protection of traditional rights. It is to provide protection for rights that have been reduced to material form. I think the chief director has already spoken to that. So intangible intellectual property is recognized in our National Heritage Act. In Chapter 1, Section 5 of the bill, of the proposed bill, the whole bill seeks to limit the period of protection of pure traditional rights. That is, it's not looking at having your derivative rights, you have your pure traditional rights being protected under your designs, say the designs or trademark rights. If you protect under the designs rights, that means the pure indigenous knowledge as it is. That therefore means 15 years or 10 years down the line, that's in the public domain. And we're saying the knowledge is not in the public domain, it's within the community. So moving to have it protected in its pure form means in another 10 years, what we call traditional knowledge in South Africa, everybody will be, it will be free for all. So our bill is talking to the opposite. We register everything in a database, voluntarily though. So whoever comes up must show the department or the state that they have spoken to the originators of the knowledge. There is consent, there is benefit sharing agreements which are in place. So we know that whatever, there might be 100 people talking to the Ncwana community. Hundreds of them, we get to share benefits out of that. We have benefit sharing agreements and royalties will flow back. So I won't have this knowledge registered and then I only have royalties flowing to me from one person only, because it will be licensed in its pure form. But licensing it and allowing different people, users, to invent around that, especially with the consent provided, if they invent around the same work, then a lot of benefits will flow to the communities and they will be empowered. Instead of having one individual company stealing the information or individual. So moving on to traditional rights again, the bill talks of the lapsing of rights as contained in Chapter 1, Section 7 of the bill. So rights would actually cease, would lapse and cease at any cost when they are registered. So which is exactly what we are against, that you cannot get to register. If one from a community gets to register the traditional works, then therefore all the right laws are supposed to exist, that the only word is emphasizing the knowledge holder. So pure traditional laws should not last, so they should not be registered under copyright. We don't have registration per se in South Africa, but there is registration under the design. We only have registration under copyright in the cinematograph area. So this intellectual property is limited in time. As you will recall that if you register under design, the community will give consent, but Simpiwa as one who works with the community will end up losing the rights 15 years down the line or 10 years down the line. But the original work will revert to the community as it's their pure knowledge. But whoever comes up again, so the community, for as long as it's alive, for example, the area of copyright, they will always enjoy benefits. That is, for the life of the one they worked with, plus 50 years after their death, and then after 50 years, the creative work will be in the public domain, but the original work will revert to the community. So that's what we are pushing for. And when it gets to the issue of traditional trademarks and designs, they also lapse on registration. Even though trademarks would be protected for a period of 10 years renewable, that is, their renewal is perpetual, so they can have protection forever. But the fact that there's this clause which talks to lapsing of trademarks upon registration, that therefore means people are still disenfranchised, or communities will lose out on their works. And moving on to the issue of a registrar of traditional knowledge, the bill has proposed to establish an office of registration of traditional knowledge. We have system in place. The bill is dealing with the protection of without focusing on the commercial aspect, but seeks to use the IP system in a limited manner, and therefore it takes away the commercial rights that are currently used when misappropriation takes place. If we are to have protection granted using this system, it's a matter of just saying the new system, the misappropriation will continue. If we don't use the IP system, I can actually, as an individual, go to a community who has registered through the proposed bill and still misappropriate using the IP system. So we're basically not focusing on what we need to focus on. We're merely paying lip service to the issue. And in conclusion, I think we mentioned the fact that the protection of traditional law can be done in several complementary ways, as it is stipulated in the policy on the protection of traditional knowledge using the IP system. The DTI is basically focused on the commercial aspect by using the IP system. You will recall that the 2007 policy, there are quite a number of options which are outlined in that policy, looking at sui generis, IP, competition laws, criminal laws. So there's a whole lot of options which were looked at, but the detailed mandate is basically to focus on intellectual property. So that's what we've done now with the bill, with the assistance of Parliament. So we're merely moving within our mandate, and due to the cross-cutting nature of intellectual property, various departments, as I think Bishop directed earlier, various departments have got specific roles to play in this whole game. They would actually protect DST. You know, they are coming up with a bill. They've got databases they're looking into. Environmental affairs is already done as part, complemented by the patent system. So we're merely consolidating everything now. We've gone through the patent system. It's done, accepted around the world using the IP system. So we're just moving on to the trade aspect, that is, we'll have a protection under trademarks, the copyright aspect, the designs. So it's just a matter of complementing what has been accepted and protected internationally. If you look at the case of Pelargonium and Rooibos, the Convention on Biodiversity actually gets to call South Africa and ask us to, did you actually give permission to this multinational to take them lease? If that has not happened, then everything goes back, all registration takes place internationally. So the gaps that have been identified are that of coordination and details was mandated by Cabinet in 2008 to draft a policy to address IP matters in the country. That includes fiscal coordination. With proper coordination, every department will play its relevant role and protection can be effected accordingly. As we're saying that we could see that the IP is not the best way or the only way. We're just looking at the commercial aspect, but to protect traditional knowledge holistically, there are departments which can do different, come up with different pieces of legislation. The preservation part, but we're looking at the commercial aspect, which is currently used to misappropriate. So the DTIS has since proposed a policy which also seeks to address the issues of coordination on IP matters, and all departments were consulted and has been approved by Cabinet for public consultations. That's the policy on the national intellectual property list, intellectual property matters in the country. In conclusion, Chair, the main focus of the DTI basically is commercialization, and the IK that is derived from communities is used by private individuals to misappropriate the knowledge and to get benefits financially from such, and therefore in an attempt to pay lip service to holders of indigenous knowledge as proposed in this bill is detrimental to the rights of these knowledge bearers. The bill therefore seeks to limit the rights of holders of indigenous knowledge would however that they would have under the current IP laws. Thus on its own fails to afford appropriate protection because we are trying to address the misappropriation as it is done under the current IP system. So the last slide says that the DTI view that the bill before the committee cannot be dealt with by the DTI as it is. Its main focus is basically not to offer protection using the IP system holistically, but attempts to recognize indigenous knowledge as intellectual property. Therefore, the approach has several limitations which the DTI is not prepared to support, as it seeks to the basic standards appropriation in disguise, and it's actually delaying the whole process of protection. Yeah, the bill also seeks to take away all the rights of indigenous knowledge holders upon registration, which is not in the spirit of commercializing the knowledge and benefiting the IK holders in the national economy. As we recall, the objectives of which were laid out in the policy of 2007 is to also benefit the national economy, benefit the knowledge holders, and prevent misappropriation, and also prevent biopiracy. So there's a whole list of issues which the policy seeks to address through this bill. The appropriate legislation would therefore be the one that seeks to enhance protection of indigenous knowledge in those areas that the IP is unable to protect. Chair, thank you very much. That's the end of the of our input. Thank you.
I certainly like to thank you, and we appreciate that you have all attached domains of IP, etc. It has been useful. I don't know if, Professor Overdeen, you've got the same DTI presentation. Right, no, because I just would like you to have it, but the DDG will, as she indicated when we opened up with DTI, would just like to comment, you know, make a few policy comments. I hope I'm correct on that one, DDG.
Thank you, Chair. Just after obviously the colleagues have spoken, and we are responding to the call to cut costs. You see that our team will shrink further from time to time, but it would not compromise any of the quality that we will put to this committee. Chair, I just wanted to sum up on some of the points that have been made. Chair, you will recall that as the presentation today was going in terms of the comparison, and we've deliberately decided to move away from that comparison because we want both issues to be looked at on their own merit. So I think the bill that is in front of this committee right now is this one, and I think we just want to focus ourselves on that one and so that we can see its merit. So Chair, when they were presenting, Prof did mention the issues around licensing. I think Simpoet did touch on that they would like it to be an informal process of licensing. That is exactly a trap.
Sorry, I was
okay. Okay, I was saying that when the Prof was presenting in relation to the area of licensing, in relation to this the traditional knowledge, that they are looking at an informal way of doing it. What we're saying is that it's exactly that problem of making it too informal, preying on the fact that these people often do not know what is good for them. So what happens is that, as McDonald has said, they will come and speak to these people, and without the knowledge of these people, run and go and register these things and not even acknowledge or even benefit these people from which they take the knowledge. So that informal way, it will perpetuate exactly that abuse. And hence, there is the intervention in terms of the role of the state, that because we are talking about vulnerable communities who are not fully able to protect themselves, it is the obligation of the state to come in to protect where it is possible. It is for that reason that we would like to see the arrangement. If there is anybody negotiating with the community, the state must be involved so that we can be in a position to mitigate the risk that arises from the imbalance in terms of power relations. So we don't think that there's anything wrong with the state coming in there. It is because the need has been identified. And in all of our policy interventions, where there is vulnerability on the part of the person that needs to benefit, the state comes in to protect. So the state might not fully give you a protection because the state does not afford that because it's your private right. But where there's vulnerability, we step in. And Chair, I think we just want to make that clear that we do not think that it's in the interest of committees to make an informal arrangement. It will continue to perpetuate the abuse that is actually currently happening, which we are seeking to stop. And also the other point that was made was around the complexity of the IP laws. Prof did show you a very big, obviously, book with many pages. But I think what we're trying to put here is that it actually should not be that complicated. If we have the intention to protect this community, those laws must be understandable to those people. The issue is that if you want to now take IK and say it's a new kid on the block, when it's been existing for so many years, and then therefore needing different ways of dealing with it, it is not true. Because ever since it existed, it has been misappropriated, abused, using this system that we don't want to trick to protect it. So I think on those issues, we need to look at the practicality of it. We've seen what's happening on the ground. And we cannot come and then speak about it as if it's a historical thing. We've seen it on the ground. We've seen the abuse. We've seen the misappropriation. So we need to trick the IP laws to talk to that problem so that we close that loop. We might not succeed in the IP system to protect it from an area of preservation, promotion, and all of that. But we definitely will stop the theft because the IP system will pick it up. So we are saying that we need to put that stop to the misappropriation. That is the challenge that we've identified. So we cannot now put another mechanism to deal with the problem. Like I said the last time, Chair, you cannot say when your house has been broken in through the roof, then you go and make your walls high. You're not dealing with the problem. You can still make the walls high, but deal with the fact that if they have entered through the roof, deal with that part. That is the problem. So that is what we are saying now. We're dealing with that problem. The IP system is the one that is allowing this abuse. So we want to put that the buffer there. And Chair, I don't agree with the fact that the IK is a new kid on the block, therefore it needs a special kind. We've said it is intellectual property. It is intellectual property, whether we like it or not, but it is intellectual property. And if you recall, Conrad Fester of UNIDA, who came to the committee to present, he did cover a whole lot of work around the world. And he has shown to us how intellectual property has been used in other countries to protect intellectual property. And those countries, you can clearly see, countries like your New Zealand, your Venezuela, they are using this system, and you can see how their intellectual, their IK is protected. So we are saying that the longer we wait, the more we are going to actually create a lot of gaps. And he did indicate that, yes, maybe the shoe might be a bit tight, a bit uncomfortable, but it doesn't mean it doesn't fit. And so that is our approach as well, that it does fit, tweak it, so that then you are able to make it to protect IK. If it's not sufficiently protecting it, we know that if we tweak the intellectual property law system to protect it, at least from an IP perspective, we will be able to do that. Let other laws come in, whether it's a suit, another legislation, or whatever it is that we want to call it, but it must look at the gaps that IP is not able to deal with. And we are saying that if we do it like that, there's absolutely no need, I think, for anyone to doubt if the communities will understand it. We need to make an effort at the state to make sure that the communities understand exactly that. And the role of the state is exactly to educate the communities, but also to protect them. So we'll be doing that. And we commit to ensuring that that can be done. In fact, Chair, as we started proposing the legislation here, the CPIC has already made plans for this. So we already have a budget for this. So we think that there is a need that was identified. So we've made proper plans for it. Our systems are in place, and we should be able to deal with it. Chair, the other thing that I just wanted to also comment on is... the other thing, Chair, that was mentioned during the presentation by Prof was the area where in the IP bill where it talks to deeming a community as a legal entity, and that it is not clear how that is going to be happening. But Chair, you recall the discussions in this committee that we needed to ensure that communities, for them to get protection, they should not be put in a box. Where communities are not able to create trust, the law must be able to deem that community as a legal entity, that community is identifiable. So this debate took place in that committee, and a lot of advice from experts in terms of whether it is possible was given. So this was based on informed information, like on expert information, on a number of these areas. Is it possible to do it like that? Because what we normally do, the error that we always make, if we want to take people in the way that they operate, for them to get protection, they must change themselves to fit into the law. You can't make it like that, because then you're not affording protection. You want people to change to fit into a system. So we want to make sure that when we are able to recognize a system or a practice, let's recognize it, and let's allow the law to do that. And these laws are made by Parliament. They can be changed anytime to address the need. And then the courts will interpret them. If we are wrong, we'll then review as we go along. But the courts are exactly set up to do that, to interpret these laws so that we can then put them into effect. Chair, the last point I want to make is the point around the enforcement. And I think Simpiwe touched on it, but I just want to emphasize it again, that it is not true that in the IP bill that was processed, there is no mechanism for protection. In fact, that IP bill says we must use this system because already there is a system to protect. We have an enforcement function within CITIC that is exactly doing that. So we are able to protect. We do see counterfeit goods all the time. That's private property that we're protecting. So this IK is going to be protected still under that function. So there's absolutely nothing that is true about the fact that there is no enforcement mechanism that is put in place. Lastly, Chair, again, just to maybe to request in terms of the Honourable Member James to also maybe allude to the policy basis for this particular approach, so that we can see where this bill is coming from. I think we've explained the process and the interrogation that a lot of policy options that were put on the table, how they were interrogated and how they were addressed. So maybe if we can see the policy basis for it, but also to see the regulatory impact assessment study of this bill, so that we can see also if that comparison, when it is being done, of saying this is the most cost-effective way of protecting IK, on what basis is it? If you have not done a cost-benefit analysis, you have not done a regulatory impact assessment, therefore you cannot compare with another one and say this one is more cost-effective, because you need to be comparing things that are similar, so that we can see which one weighs above the other. So maybe we can be assisted with that, and maybe we can see a better picture maybe after that. At the moment, we do not see that. All we see here is that they are just documents that were made during the parliamentary process. We responded to them. The experts came in. There was a number of professors that came to this committee to provide expert knowledge on this. WIPO was consulted. And so, Chair, we do believe that we have done our bit in response to this particular bill, and we do not think it's a new bill. We think that it's a very same bill. It may have been tweaked, maybe certain provisions, but it is not a new bill. But if you look at the institutions that they want to create, if anybody is going to say the previous bill was not cost-effective, then we must think about the cost of this one. Chair, we'll stop at that and take questions. Thank you.
Right, members, just in case you're worried about your timing and everything, we started at 17.35 and Honourable James started speaking at 17.40. And being that it's his bill, that he tabled, it's had 1.5 hours, we broke for tea, we've been here now exactly with the DTI 1 hour, exactly from 19.55 to 20.55. Now, I'm going to ask if you have any questions. However, before I do that, I want to ask the DTI just one thing. Will you be leaving someone here tomorrow morning? Because I know you just mentioned we're all now, of course, in fiscal constraints.
Who will be here tomorrow?
Yeah. Because why I'm asking this is... I think it would be useful for the questions to be asked and for you to respond tomorrow, and that will also give a little leeway, as I said to yourself, Professor Owen Dean, because you indicated some of your constraints, and then we could start off with yourself at 10 or even 10 past 10, do you follow what I mean? And that will allow an element of flexibility there. So raise your questions. This won't limit you adding to them tomorrow. But if you've got any serious questions you would like to just convey to the DDG, please do so now. Some of the questions may be more serious. I have just 2 comments to make, but I'll make them at the end. Questions to the DDG. I'll take yourself first, Professor Owen D.
I would like to comment more comprehensively tomorrow, but at this stage I just want to ask not so much a question, but ask that something be done. Namely, I must say, when I listened to the comments of the DTI on the PTK bill, I actually wonder whether we're reading the same bill, because a lot of what is said is actually not to be found in the PTK bill at all. For instance, the suggestion that under the PTK bill, rights lapse upon registration. Now, I was at pains to point out that we do not require registration, so I don't know where these rights lapse on registration. And that leads me to my request. My request is, will the DTI please, amplify their criticism in this document by referring to the actual sessions in the PTK bill on which they base their criticism? Because I don't know where those sections are. I haven't seen them in the bill myself. So I need to be pointed at those sections so that I can properly evaluate the criticism that has been made of them. And then the second point I want to make is that there seems to be a bit of a misconception here. The DTI seems to feed on the assumption that the IP lab is an IP bill. it's using the IP system, whereas the PT cable is somehow outside the IP system. That is not so. I mean, the PT cable is using IP system in exactly the same way and to the same extent as the IP lab bill. It's just doing it in a different manner. 90% of what was said about the policy and the objectives and all of these good things apply equally to the PT cable. I could find myself agreeing with 95% of what they were saying, yes, indeed, that is exactly what the PT cable seeks to do. So I just want to clarify this point that the PT cable is as much intellectual property as the IP lab is. They are both failing under the banner of intellectual property and using the structures of intellectual property. Thank you.
Now, when you use the word failing, I was thinking how big the ocean is, and you know, all kinds of things sailing from a small yacht to an oil tanker. I simply say it because I used to do a lot of sailing. Honourable James.
Thank you very much. As Professor Dean said, we will have a much more elaborate and detailed response to the particular issues that you raise. I just have one question, one comment. You talk about biopiracy. There's nothing in here, in the IP, LAB, or in the PTK that deals with biological piracy. It's not part of the domain. I'm in the IP, so I don't know what you're talking about when you say that. And I must tell you, as I know something about the patenting of actical chemical properties when it comes to pharmaceutical products. I'm an honorary professor of human genetics at the medical school at UCD, and I knew something about the subject. It's got nothing to do with it either. So I have no idea. I want you to explain to me what you're talking about when you're speaking about biopiracy. It is not relevant. It's not part of the act. And I found your presentation on actually incoherent. The second point I want to make, which is in the response to the DDG, is that it's immensely costly to pass a bad law, which I think the IPLAB is, and put it through an experimentation process where, in anticipation of the law being passed, one can get a level of legal clarity and a level of purposive clarity in terms of its intention and the way it is drafted in order to achieve the objectives you want to achieve. We've had a long history about the Originals Bill. I'm not surprised that it's been sitting around for 5 years. It's taken 5 years and still not signing the law. There's a particular reason for that, and perhaps you can explain to me why that has happened. But part of it, I think, is that I think that what we're facing is a really bad law. And we can point out exactly why that's so, and we've been trying to do that. If we look at our property comments that we received on the private members board, there's not a single comment that is fundamentally opposed to that law, coming from agencies and people and individuals who not only are competent in their own area, but to understand what it is we're trying to do. And so, but if you could explain to me what biopiracy has to do with this, please, as a question, and then we will certainly have more elaborate questions, responses tomorrow.
Yes, no, more, tomorrow morning sounding more and more exciting. Honourable Khadebi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Actually, according to the program, we're supposed to finish around 8 o'clock.
I thought it was 9 o'clock.
No.
I'm just saying, I thought it was, and that's why I think we can't go on for 2 hours longer, meaning 11. Remember, I used the word 11. Because we never finish at 8, you know, it's foreign to our committee.
What is critical here? You know, when Advocate Nathans raised the issue of the universities arriving at different points of view of the issue, that's what we call the school of thoughts, if you're at the university. Around any issue, there will be a particular school of thoughts which by this group will have this view and this approach and the other one that approach. And then here, it's still the same. It's correct that one of the best expositions which we had during that time was Professor Feather. Yeah, really, he gave a very good exposition. Actually, saying that this feels good, that's the right way to go. So we have Professor Dean today. He was there. He was on the other side.
So we had to take a decision in the process. But say I want to, because this thing about this issue, which is coming today about this bill being having to be suspended, this one issue dealt with, it is purely commission. So I don't know whether the department can come with this, some sort of a study. How much money is involved around this issue of IK? How much money is involved? Because this issue which is raised by Honorable James, that is taking 5 years now. This thing not into law. We actually learned about that outside this country. The commercial interest told us that this will not see the light of day until 2014. It is exactly what is happening. So that's why I was speaking to a country from intelligence. You guys, what are you doing? What are you doing about this? Because we cannot have foreign people telling us the processes inside our own parliament and then they start in the same way. So there must be some sort of commercial interest somewhere. I like a situation where you can like a situation where you can really deal with it. No, quantify what money are involved here. What money are involved here? So that as we move forward, because really, Honorable Chairperson, what I've learned since I started, everything I've heard before, but this is the process of Parliament, we'll do it accordingly. But really, we must do it in the right environment. In the right environment, where is all the knowledge and the truth is on the table. So, Chair, can we do it tomorrow and then, yeah, please. But if they can quantify that, I really wanted that aspect.
What I was saying earlier, we literally burnt our fingers last time and going beyond nine, remember, we burnt our fingers there. But we are closing off at this point. Just as a matter of information though, I believe the reference may have been made to the current IPLAB about how long it took. But when we think of why it was returned, of course, to the chair, to Parliament, it was for three reasons. We had said as a committee, it is not a money bill. And that was a question that was raised by the person who asked, it went to the President, and the President took his own advice on the matter after receiving this letter. Secondly, the tagging issue had come up. And thirdly, referral, the referral to the National House of Traditional Leaders. The President's three constitutional advisers, not full-time employed, different people called in for the expertise, said definitely not, it is not a money bill, but he is correct. Secondly, though, it was incorrectly tagged. Of course, to me that is a technicality in some ways and easily addressed. Thirdly, an even bigger technicality was that I, after consulting legal advisers here at Parliament, was told it wasn't right for me to sign a letter to inviting the National House of Traditional Leaders, only to learn that according to the relevant piece of legislation, that's why I was so firm about the recent one, that in actual fact the first invitation or whatever it is needed to be signed by the Secretary of Parliament. Thereafter I could see. So I don't think that those were substantive issues at all about. And in fact, the work of the committee has never, ever criticised, per se, the substantive work. So I think we should bear in mind the reason. And may I add that process of getting it back on track took 18 months. Back on track. I didn't see this. It was like looking for a needle in a haystack to find out the status for a full year. It's not here. And I think it's very important to keep those factors in mind. But let me add, it's clear to me, having done my own, I have two fact books which vie with my own economics at that time, and then I actually waded through and studied, because I found this bill so complex that we have. intellectual property. It was a new thing to me and everyone else. And I found so many pitfalls that I requested to take the committee overseas, because we thought over there we would get more objective points of view and advice. When we got to WIPO, one of the first things on record, when we said, thank you very much for making the time, not just an hour, but a day to see us, and then your sister organization giving us another workshop here, a day and a half. And we really appreciate your agreement to do X and Y. And at the end of that, I said, thank you so much for your advice, etc. And they said, advice, we're waiting for your bill, because right now we're not too sure. Now, they have made progress since then. Never doubt that. They have made progress. And I don't think any of us would doubt that, because they are keeping in communication. I'm sorry, the Honourable Albert is not here tonight, because he recently went to Geneva. And I will never ever speak on another member's behalf, least of all another member from another party. Allow him to speak for himself when he returns, you know, into the session, as it were. But let me tell you, by the sound of things, my own correspondence informally is certainly that they would continue to look forward to our piece of legislation. However, and I want to remind members, this cannot in any way mean that we ignore a private member's bill on the table. And I must really advise you on that. We need to take it seriously and get all the responses we've had from the DTI, weigh it up, hear more from Professor Honourable James and his advisors, among them Professor Owen Dean, and also when you need other names, they're never available to one, but also the other professor, yeah, I think it is, yes, thank you. And most people don't remember my name either, but thank you very, very much for all of the inputs. There have been valuable inputs made. And the big thing is this, Honourable James, you jogged our memories again. We've heard some fresh information. And having said that, fresh information does not necessarily persuade you to change your taste. So all I'm saying is to DTI, and I think DDG, you were quite correct, and so was the Chief Director, to say, this is no longer your bill. People forget the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill is no longer yours. We made, I don't know how many amendments, but probably 60%. It is our bill. There's a bill here in Parliament, and we are dealing with it now. But I welcome this, and I don't want to delay you any longer. I've spoken 7 minutes. I've stayed my welcome here. Professor Owen Dean, I appreciate you being able to return tomorrow just after 10. So tomorrow we will start off with the trade issues, as it were, a few of them, from 9 until about 9:30, 9:45. We'll go over the rules on this again, Mr. Herman, so that we're quite clear where we stand on the matter. And we'll lead off with yourself, Advocate van der Merwe, and come in then with, you'll be there by now. So I'm going to appeal to members to get you about 9:15. I'm also going to appeal to new members and those who've just indicated how much they love our issues and topics, and who are from Intelligence and Justice. Thank you all. Meeting adjourned till tomorrow morning. Where is it? Old Assembly Chamber. I'm going to go to the